Oh, thank you so much, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. A much less tumultuous day than Friday's show was, and probably slightly less than tomorrow's show will be, don't you think?
I can't believe the election is already tomorrow. Doesn't it feel like we've been talking about it for years?
Yeah, but you're the only
right up
one.
On us. No, this thing has been looming since we were in kindergarten.
I'm thankful it's tomorrow, but I can't believe it's already tomorrow. They always say when you get older, your grandparents used to say, time goes by so quickly, Sonny.
Yes.
Don't call me Sonny. I don't have
That's
a sunny
ridiculous.
Disposition.
Right.
But it really does. I mean, I can't believe it's already tomorrow.
Well, a week or so ago, it marked the 600th day since Ted Cruz announced he was going to run for president.
600th day.
Wow.
So, which means we only have about 600 days to go before the next one starts.
I'm Sonny, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I'm voting today. I registered online to go in and do the early voting, and I'm doing that on my way home today.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. I was going to do it yesterday because they have various locations in the suburbs. You just look it up and find out. I didn't know I had to register. I thought I could just go there and do it.
All right. I've talked to about a half a dozen people about this over the weekend, and some of them said, well, you wasted your time. You didn't need to go and register online. You just bring in your old card or your ID, and that's all you needed. So I still don't know the answer to that.
No, I don't. I think if you're registered to vote, you can go and vote early. I don't think there's step you need to take. I've never heard that before.
And you don't need to bring your voter's registration card because who has theirs? You need to bring your license.
They said to me online that they were going to send me a new one, which I imagined in my dreams.
What, had email some sort it? Because otherwise, how would you get
they
it?
They were going to send it through the mail, they said.
Well, then you'd already have voted. Mm.
No, like I was waiting. The reason I didn't do it already is because I kept waiting for that voter's registration card, which I'm sure will come Wednesday. I'm positive it'll be in the mail on Wednesday.
But you didn't move, Bill, right?
No, I haven't moved.
You didn't need to re-register.
No, right.
See, because I saw online if you were going to register, if you wanted to vote early, you could actually apply at the place for, you could register.
Yeah.
So there was something to fill out, but I think that was for people that weren't a registered voter.
See, all of this, I opened my Christmas gifts on Christmas morning. I don't know why you people are working ahead anyway.
Right. That's true. Everything has its time.
Right.
Do it in its proper time.
Exactly. No one's going to be at the polling place when I go tomorrow.
Yeah,
you know, they say
what do you need to early vote? Voters do not need to provide an excuse or a reason why they cannot vote on Election Day. This is from CookCountyClerk.com. Government-issued photo ID.
I think that's up for re-election, too.
I've heard some bad things about her, Steve.
Government-issued photo ID is not required, but is helpful if there is a question about the voter's registration, address, or signature. Providing an ID can also speed up the process because we have ID card readers at every check-in station.
All right.
You can register to vote at all early vote sites. Any voter who needs to register for the first time or file an address change or name change has to bring two forms of ID, one of which shows the voter's current address. So this is useful information for someone who hasn't registered and tomorrow is Election Day.
Yeah.
Voting equipment. Early voting is conducted on touch screens that store every ballot style in the county.
I'm bringing my own stuff.
Permitting any voter in suburban Cook to vote at any location. Your ballot will remain secret and securely stored.
Unless you take a selfie of yourself voting.
In which case, you can be arrested, right?
Not here.
But in other places, they can arrest you if you take a picture of yourself voting.
Right.
Didn't that happen to somebody?
I think maybe here you might be. I just was reading about that. Let me look it up. I think.
What did you fill out?
There was like a couple pages of
online.
You
just gave away all your credit information, I think.
Right. And I keep getting more, I get more offers for savings on vitamins now that I've done this.
Yeah,
is that good or bad?
The Illinois ban on polling selfies is apparently under court review.
Oh.
So I'd advise against it.
Could I have somebody sketch me while I'm voting?
Yeah, but the people waiting in line behind you would be really ticked off.
All right. I don't want to do that.
I can't even find the thing you filled out anywhere.
I filled it out a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago.
Did it say power of attorney at the top?
Yep. Mm. Is that bad?
No, not for him.
and they said that they would send me an early voter's registration card. So I thought, will I need that? Because I don't know where my regular voter's card
is. Who does?
I have no idea. I have a sub club card. I bring that in. And if I vote 10 times, I get a free vote next time.
All right. Well, you could do early. And I was going to go yesterday because it was a Sunday. And I thought, oh, wow, they're open till 3.
Mm-hmm.
The Brookfield Village Hall is a new location, pretty close. And then I missed the deadline. And then I was going to do it today on the way home. And at this point, why don't I wait till tomorrow?
Right.
Yeah, you get the rush of
That's
it all.
That's what my husband said.
You walk by the signs and the people illegally trying to sway your vote.
You don't think I'll get that today?
No.
I'll get
no.
No. And then you go home and you listen to the radio and you follow the returns.
Oh.
You don't do a turkey trot the day before Thanksgiving. You do it on Thanksgiving.
But the trade-off is you get it's done faster, right?
Although a lot of people did early voting, so maybe there's going to be a longer line.
I tried to say this earlier. I don't think I did. They think essentially that over half of Florida's votes have already been cast.
Half?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing.
Hey, Mark, did you vote early?
Yeah, I voted early Saturday. I had to wait about an hour and a half in line, but as I was going to point out, I was a new voter, at least in Lake County. I registered a year ago. It was real easy at the Department of Vehicles. You know, I got my new license.
DMV?
They registered me right away.
Awesome. So it took you an hour and a half to do early voting.
Yeah, and that's not surprising because if you think of it, there's a dozen early voting locations for all of Lake County, which is far fewer than the total number of precincts. If you voted in your own precinct on Tuesday, it might have been just as easy to wait until Tuesday. But they
and how many touchscreen devices did they have? Because that's probably the long line. Your regular voting place would probably have more of them. Did they have a lot?
We didn't have touchscreens. We had the old school things up here. We had to fill in a little circle with your pen.
Oh, that makes me nervous because what it says, do not go outside the lines. What if I did? Are they not going to count it?
This whole election is like outside the lines. So that's what they should use.
But they scan it. They scan it and they validate it right there on the spot. So that's whether you got some screwed up.
I know. I get very nervous until they say, okay, good to go.
Yeah.
Can I ask, Mark, did you, real quick question.
I didn't even have to bring an ID. That was interesting. They didn't even ask for an ID or nothing. They asked for my name and my address, and then they had me sign a form, and then they visually verified my signature against something they apparently have on file on a computer.
Oh.
They have a booklet at my polling place, and you just sign your name, but I'm just curious, and I'm not telling anybody to do it, but you voted early. What if you went then on election day? Do they tell you? I just want to know. I hope they say,
yeah,
oh,
they
you already voted.
They have records.
All right, good.
But those records have to be up to the minute because you could go to one, let's say tomorrow, again, don't do this, but couldn't you just go to one voting place and then drive to another? Would that register that quickly, Steve?
I'm sure it's all computerized because they have a barcode on it, so they scan it and then they know.
Well, it gets to a point where it's just like Santa Claus who knows if you're naughty or nice.
Yeah.
There's kind of a magic thing.
All right.
They know.
Bill, did you have a question for Mark?
No.
Okay. Well, Mark,
I know this is a silly question, but there are some of the races, like we know the obvious ones, but you start voting for appellate judges and stuff like that. Did you vote for everything or just the ones that you
everything.
Were more schooled
mine,
on?
Mine was, this is the first big general election I've been to in Lake County. I've been in Cook County for like 40 years, but I finally moved up to Lake County. But there was only like, I think, 6 judges for confirmation, just either yes or no. That was it. Not nearly as extensive as what I'm used to in Cook.
Because those, I have to be honest, I've done little to no, and by little to no, I mean no homework at all on the judges and stuff.
Most people don't. I pick all the Italians because I'm half Italian, and Irish because my husband's Irish, and women.
Wow, that's really despicable.
But can I tell you something? After doing that, my sister, who's a retired attorney, said, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
So she would give me a sheet that the National Bar Association recommends. And you can bring the sheet in. And for probably the last 10 years, I've been doing that.
All right. That's what I think I'm going to do.
Mark, have a good one.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Rock the vote. Rock the vote, baby. Rock the vote.
Don't tip the vote over.
Rock the vote.
Yep.
Here's some bad news too, Bill. Craig, you voted early and had to wait?
I waited about an hour and a half. I went to Stratford and Bloomingdale here. There was about 150 people ahead of me and 150 people behind me.
Jeez.
And yesterday, my dad, who was an early election judge, said it was much, 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 much worse. And today it's going to be even worse.
I bet it is.
I thought in order to vote early, you did have to have an excuse, like you were going to be out of town or you were leaving on a jet plane next day.
That was the old days.
The old days. Now there's no excuse not to get out to vote.
They used to call it, you voted absentee.
Right.
You couldn't be around.
And that I'm pretty sure you had to register for, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Well, you had to fill out an affidavit.
They know you vote. They do something with the computer with your ID, and they check you, so you can't go to another polling place and vote.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
All right, good.
So, rock the vote.
Here in DuBage County, in my area, I don't know about Chicago.
That's no, in Chicago, no one's ever voted twice. Don't worry.
Just the dead people.
Right.
Craig, early and often.
Exactly. Craig, thank you for voting. We appreciate it. Rock the vote.
Well, I'm trying to vote early. It's the often part I haven't quite figured out.
I'm just going tomorrow. You may as well just wait till tomorrow.
Well, I'm going to, there's a place near where I live. It's on the way home, and I'll pull up, and if the line looks too long, I guess I'll do it tomorrow. But my plan has been to do it early. It's just early suddenly is over.
I find it strange when I was growing up. Well, can we take a break and talk about schools and as polling places?
Because
I have a comment I'd
all
like
right.
to share with
Wendy
everyone.
Wendy has a comment, everybody. It's coming up next. We're at 312-981-7200. If you also have a comment, it's Bill and Wendy WGN.
All right. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I just handed you, you can go to the Chicago Bar Association's website, chicagobar.org, and they have a pocket guide for the November 2016 judicial election.
Yeah.
And they basically tell you who the Chicago Bar Association recommends to stay seated in the judge seat or to not retain. So they do a yes or no. This is the pocket guide. It's a lot smaller, and the red ones aren't there that I saw on the thing. So you're going to have to go through it.
Okay.
But they have like five judges that they list: HQ, highly qualified; Q, qualified; and R, not recommended. So there's only a handful of people that are not recommended.
See, my problem is these are names that I'm pretty much unfamiliar with. I'm looking through the list. The only name I recognize is Daniel Patrick Duffy because he was the man from Atlantis. But the rest of them I'm not familiar with.
That was
with.
Just Patrick Duffy.
Oh, it was? I'm voting for him for something. I don't know what. So I would like to be better schooled on who these people are and what they've done in the past. I feel weird just voting for people at random. So this will help. This
yeah,
will be good.
The Chicago Bar Association Vote Smart Guide, and it lists all of them. And some, I don't think I have all of them, though, so I may have to reprint this. But you can go to chicagobar.org.
There's a guy named Outlaw on the list.
I know, and they're telling you not to...
Jesse James was an outlaw. This guy's name is Jesse Outlaw.
Not recommended. That's a fake name.
He's one of the ones that is not recommended, and I wonder if it's because of his highly controversial name.
It's not fair. They should have looked deeper than just his name.
Right. Right.
All right, I have to take this phone call because this guy's been calling you and texting you for weeks.
All right.
Matt, go ahead.
Hello, folks.
What's
Bill
up, Matt? Yes.
I hope that you realize that you have doomed this country.
I have? Why?
Well, first of all, let me just say I'm very, very happy that the Cubs won. Extremely happy.
We all are.
Even me.
However, last week, Wendy Snyder gave you an option. Either the Cubs won and Donald Trump became president, or Hillary won and the Cubs did not win.
Yes.
As much as I wanted the Cubs to win, you had to make sure that the Cubs won. So if Donald Trump gets elected, I blame you, Bill.
Now let the record show.
He did not answer the question, Matt.
Right, I didn't answer it. I couldn't answer it.
Because he didn't understand it. He kept going, I want the Cubs to win and Trump not to be president.
Right.
So he misunderstood it.
I forgive you, Bill, but Wendy, you're still marvelous and got to.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
No,
rock
I
the vote.
Swear, and I
you didn't answer
I tussled
it.
With it on air and off, saying, wow, I really want the Cubs to be the World Series champions, but I really don't want Donald Trump to be the president. So I couldn't answer that.
No, you didn't answer
it,
so you're off the hook.
All right.
And all I wanted to mention was when we were little kids, I remember our school was a polling place.
Yeah, ours too.
And in the gymnasium, we would, if it was cold out, which it usually was in November, all the little booths would be set up in the gym. And if it was nice, we'd go out and have gym. Otherwise, we'd just go in the cafeteria or something.
Yeah.
But now they will not let kids be in school if there's a polling place going on. So tomorrow Dylan has the day off because their school is a polling place.
Oh, how about that?
That's pretty convenient.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Well, I don't know. In this election, I'll bet you if I had a choice, I wouldn't let my kid go to school. Because
Think
of what?
You don't want your son at school on election day because it's not safe?
Well, no. Let me finish my thought. In this particular election, I wouldn't want him because I still wonder if people are going to be rude and obnoxious to each other at the polls. In the past, I didn't fear it at all. This year, I do.
Well, that's kind of what I just said, though.
Yeah.
So, yes. No, I don't want him to go.
But he wouldn't be in the room where they're...
No, but people are coming and going in the school, and that just opens the door to problems, in my opinion. But that's happening at all the schools. If your school is a polling place, there is no school. That happened a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah, it started with all of the with the school shootings and things like that.
Yeah.
When schools started becoming more secure.
For safety reasons.
I agree with it.
Yeah. All right, we will talk more about the election.
That'll make America great again. Less kids at school.
Won't it?
Yeah,
that's the best thing for America. We'll take a break. We've got news and then a whole lot more. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Who likes a good podcast?
Everybody loves a good podcast, Wendy.
Telling you, we've had a radio show together and separate for many, many years, so we don't think of podcasting that often, but podcasting gives people a voice, and there's a Chicago Podcast Festival that is going on November 17th through the 19th, and in the studio with us right now, Jonathan Pitts, the producer of the whole shebang, the whole festival, correct?
Yep.
And you've brought a special guest, Tyler Green. Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
Tyler's the artistic director of the podcast festival. I brought him on board because he has been working involved with podcasts for the last 10 years. My main experience was running the Chicago Improv Festival. And just like one day I had the idea 20 years ago there should be a Chicago Improv Festival, about a year and a half ago, I was like, there should be a Chicago Podcast Festival. And I was like, but I need somebody better than me to help me with this.
But the thing about you is, when you have an idea like this, and I know this firsthand from watching the way the Improv Festival has grown, it starts small, but it doesn't stay small for long. It becomes huge really, really fast.
It stayed small for about a week.
That's right, right? That's your pacing.
30-plus acts
over
four nights, three nights.
So. Yeah, and so I got Tyler involved because he's been involved with podcasts. And, you know, we sort of combine our main interests. I'm coming from comedy, and he's coming from storytelling. And then we sort of have the Venn diagram between everything in between.
Yeah.
You know, because the great thing about podcasts is that they involve every type of subject you'd ever want. Like anybody, if they've never listened to a podcast, all you got to do is type in any subject you're interested in and then the word podcast, and you will then be able to have a podcast that you're interested in and you can listen to. And it's that easy because for certain audiences, they don't think that podcasting, because it's such a new medium,
right,
is something they can do.
Right.
When it's very easy.
Anyone can do it. There are podcasts on like unboxing new toys.
Yep.
Collecting pens, crafting.
Are you looking at my podcast app? Come on.
You know what it's reminiscent of, though, is years ago, you would go to a major bookstore and you look in the magazine section, and there was a magagine for every, there was, whatever
great
your
analogy.
Interest was, that's what it was. So that's what this
knitting podcast.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right, Bill.
Kitten fancier.
Right.
There's a podcast for that.
Yeah. I know. They won't let me on, but it exists. Keep sending in my application. So it is. It's the modern-day version of that.
Absolutely it
What's
is.
The strangest one you guys have encountered so far? What's the podcast that you go, wow, that's a small audience?
I have heard that there is a podcast for pig farmers.
Oh, there is.
So. Doesn't Orion Samuelson host that?
He may. He might, yeah.
If not, he should.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now... With our festival, what we do is everything's live tapings. So you're going to be able to see the podcast happening live. So you're going to be entertained by the people while they're speaking and while they're doing it. So whether it be that you're already a fan of some of the existing podcasts, the podcast nerds that are out there that have their favorite shows, or whether or not you're new to it and you're just like, oh, Bob Saget's going to be on one of these podcasts.
Yeah.
I want to go check this out. Or Kristen Vanganese from Criminal Minds is going to be a special guest. You know, we have so many special guests for this podcast festival. It's almost like that's its own festival.
Right.
Name some names.
Well, like I said, Bob Saget, Kristen Vanganese, Justin Kirk, Scott Adsit, Rhymefest, and who are some of the others?
Sarah Watkins, a great fiddle player. She's going to be on the show called Song Exploder, where they break down a song live, perform it, talk about it.
K. Todd Freeman, who used to be on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Carrie Coon.
Yeah.
Leftovers.
Yeah. We've got Rick Hogan's going to be one of the.
Oh, guests. Nice.
Yeah, on a show called Crybabies, where he's going to talk about what makes him cry.
I love that. I have to hear that.
Right?
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I want to know what makes him cry.
Yeah. And we also have Andre Royo from The Wire.
Oh, yeah. Bubbles
he
from The
Bubbles
Wire.
From The Wire.
The one name you just mentioned, Justin Kirk, is kind of an obscure name, but if you were
he
a
was
fan
on
of
Weeds.
The show Weeds,
yeah,
he was the brother-in-law, and now he's been on Modern Family the last
right.
couple of years. He's really a
great
talented actor.
Yep.
Now, are these all Chicago-based podcasts, or are they national?
No, there's a blend of national and local. We very consciously tried to pick shows from everywhere and all kinds of shows, all different types of hosts. We
yeah.
tried in the 30 shows that we picked to have a nice sort of diverse selection in almost every way.
So they're not all about things that make people cry, just Rick Hogan's.
Just that one show.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
And
right.
Bill, that's all we need.
Bill was just a guest on Jimmy Pardo's podcast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And,
nice.
You know, it's a podcast. People listen to it. 99% of them are just audio podcasts. Some
right.
have video to go along. But people feel a belonging, and they get very...
attached.
Totally.
I've talked about that. Like, part of what's exciting about this as a new art form is that these are literally voices in your head. And you have
right.
and you have a relationship with the hosts that you don't in some other ways. It's kind of the way my grandparents used to talk about radio when
yeah.
they would be listening to Fibber McGee and Molly.
Yeah.
That's
the
exactly
relationship,
it.
Yeah, the relationship that they had with it. The audiences have such a strong relationship to the hosts that they feel like they know them already. And so when they have a chance to see a live taping, it's a celebration of a community related to that particular podcast.
I'm sure you know Mark Maron or Adam
yes.
Carolla or
yeah.
Jimmy Pardo, who
sure.
Wendy just mentioned. It's a hybrid of the stand-up that we've discussed a little bit and the storytelling that we've also discussed a little
right.
bit. It's really a very comfortable environment. The audience becomes so aware of the host and his or her likes and dislikes that
mm-hmm.
it's a built-in
right.
familiarity that's
it's
really
not like
nice.
You're going down to Georgia trying to win over an audience that's
right.
never seen you. These
right.
are people that already are involved with, they get your nuances.
Yeah.
You know.
Although some aren't as entertaining either when you do like the Cat Fancy podcast.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, right. My husband does Rebel Force Radio, which is just Star Wars people, so it's not like they have, you know, any stand-up or
right.
any
right.
Darth Vader that comes out. But again, it's something that's very intimate and you could be a part of and listen to.
You know, and one of the things that I like about this range of what we've been able to bring in and what Tyler's been able to bring in is, like, we have a show called Selected Shorts, Too Hot for Radio. It's normally on radio, but this is stuff that they can't do on radio.
Yeah.
And they bring in a bunch of actors to, you know, read the stories, so it's very theatrically driven. And then we also have, you know, someone like Shannon Cation with his Homemade Stories, and he's a former Grand Slam Moth winner, and he tells stories about his life. So you have that kind of stuff, as well as you have Hello from the Magic Tavern, which is three improvisers from Chicago who created an alternative world, and everybody exists in that alternative world that takes place, you know, it's a magic tavern in another place. And so you have such a wide range of types of shows.
Sure.
I mean, you have Kevin McDonald's podcast, which is called The Kevin McDonald's Kevin McDonald Show.
Yeah.
It's essentially like a Dean Martin variety show that's done as a podcast.
He's but from Kids in the Hall, for people who
yes,
don't know, and we're going to have him on
yeah.
in a few weeks
yeah.
to talk about that.
Yeah, and you know, and at the same time, then you also have very sincere podcasts like Minority Corner, featuring an African-American couple that are talking about the world as it exists and the intersectionality as to what's happening in right now. I mean, one of the things I've talked about recently is that, to me, the difference between improv and podcasting is improv is about the moment, which means it's often very self-referential,
mm-hmm.
whereas podcasting is of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's happening in the podcast is really deeply rooted in the times. So as we are post the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series, and as we're a day before the election, all of us are being affected by everything that's happening, and podcasts seem to be able to respond to that culturally, socially, politically, artistically, more effectively than improv, which is often more like, hey, you and I are roommates
mm-hmm.
and we're upset about the butter.
One of the examples of that like that I was just thinking of when you were saying that was there's a show called The Room Where It's Happening. So for all of you Hamilton fans out there, The Room Where It Happens is one of the big songs in Hamilton. And they got, so these two comedians are host the show, and they got Eliza from the Chicago production of Hamilton to come after she does two shows on a Saturday and come do this interview live with them to close out our festival at the Promontory in Hyde Park. So when you talk about of the moment and unique experiences, You can't get much more unique in the
than
moment
a
than
Nashville
that.
Hamilton podcast.
Wow, that's a great score.
Right?
After two performances?
I know, right?
We're having a car to pick her up and drive her over and then, you know,
take her to the spa where she'll stay over.
Get her some roses and stuff.
That's how we should
good.
Be.
Yeah.
Good, good, good.
All right, so chicagopodcastfestival.org.
Yep. Correct.
All right, that's where the schedule is. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to find out where it is because it's a handful of locations. When it is, November 17th through the 19th, we're talking about the Chicago Podcast Festival with Jonathan Pitts, Tyler Green. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. It's Bill Liff. It's Wendy Snyder. You can always listen to podcasts of our show at WGNRadio.com, but it's not like a legit podcast because we can't swear on them.
No.
Because they take them just from this radio station and put them. But they're still entertaining.
They're still fun, sure.
But if you want the real deal, no holds barred, you need to check out the Chicago Podcast Festival. Jonathan Pitts, the producer of the festival, and the artistic director, Tyler Green, is here. What are some of the podcasts that we may not be familiar with but that are very popular?
I have one here. It's called Bullseye with this guy, Jesse Thorne, who started the Maximum Fun Podcast Network, which is a whole host of mostly sort of funny shows, but also thought-provoking shows. And his is kind of the banner show that became a public radio program that's played on public radio stations also. The cool thing about this is, one, it's in Hyde Park at the Promontory, which is just a beautiful location. But he's also got Dwayne Kennedy, the comic. He's got Andre Royo, who played Bubbles in The Wire, and then he's got this musical guest, Split Single. And your ticket for that show also includes this podcast called Lady to Lady, opening for them, which is a group of three female comics talking about very funny things. So for $25, you get all of that. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like, why wouldn't you come hang out with the Bubbles from The Wire? The bonus
said.
Is all that other stuff.
That's,
you know,
worth $24 right there. The rest for a buck.
And your laughs and claps will be on the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then some of the other ones that are really popular. We have one show that's already sold out. It's called My Favorite Murder, and they've sold 950 seats in 2 or 3 days. And it's two women comics who talk about a real-life murder, and they find the humor in it.
Is it always the same murder, Jonathan, or does it change from show to show?
It changes from show to show. Unfortunately,
good.
America has its share of murders.
Lots of murders, yay.
Yeah, I was planning on putting it in my own podcast calling it My Favorite Serial Killer. I don't think it's that much of a...
It doesn't have quite the same ring to it.
No. And then we have another show that's almost sold out. There's only about 100 seats left, and it's called Guys We Bleeped, and it's two women stand-up comics who get on the air. They're feminist stand-up comics, and they talk every show about a different guy that they bleeped. And
I may have to listen to this one.
And it's
they
very...
talk about a lot of other things in that universe, too. It's not just guys.
It's the starting
it's not just,
point.
It's situational. That's the
but
starting point.
But people can relate to that.
For sure.
And there's some kind of voyeuristic thing of listening to that as well.
And they're hysterical people.
Yeah, they are.
It's just like listening to your friends talk. You get to be a fly on the wall.
Super funny. So, you know, like if you like Broad City, you would like Guys We Bleeped.
Oh,
because,
nice.
You know, and one of the things that I like about podcasting is that, unlike maybe mass media where everybody's stuck within their roles for TV, here the talent is able to create its own universe, its own world, where two women can go, let's just go do this, and they do it. And all of a sudden it's amazing, as opposed to like, well, you're the funny one, you're the next door neighbor,
right?
You're the nerd guy who goes over here. Everybody is able to, whether, you know, regardless of your skin color, regardless of your sexual persuasion, regardless of your points of view in life, you're able to create a show that's reflecting of you and your interests. So I feel like in the day before the election, that this is a very democratic art form.
Mm-hmm.
More, you know,
it would be.
Yeah.
Is it much of a transition? A lot of these podcasters normally are just doing it in a room in their house, and now all of a sudden they're in a theater with 950 people. Is that a big transition for some of them?
This is what I do all the time. I work for The Moth, I work for WBEZ, and I do, of course, this as well. I do these live events, and you work on this transition, right? And it takes... it takes some time to get used to it, because the whole point, one of the whole reasons people do this is so they can sit not in the room with a bunch of people, right?
Yeah.
So you've really got to do it. You got to do it over and over again. It's just kind of, I think, like, I haven't done stand-up, but I imagine it's like doing stand-up in different rooms, getting used to what it is. And it's a different thing, right? So we talked about the intimacy of the art form and having these people in your ear. Suddenly you see them in front of you. You're getting something different.
Instant reaction.
Exactly. Which, you know, is challenging, could be good. You know, well, you never know.
And also, one of the things that's really beneficial, speaking to somebody who's been trained in improv and has improv as a background, is that a lot of times you do a show in front of 150 people, and then that show's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you've created, and even if you're improvising on a podcast or any conversation that comes out of it, it has a permanency that, as long as we have technology, will be around and accessible.
Absolutely.
It'll be out there on the internet forever. Forever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, hate to put the pressure on everybody, but...
for somebody who wants to go into this line of work, podcasting, is there any real money to be made in it?
Talk to Mark Maron.
He's doing all right.
There are a few people, Adam Carolla as well, but they have figured out a way to make money where it's a living. Most people kind of do this as a hobby, don't you think?
A lot of people, I would say the average person that does a podcast, but, you know, dealing with some of our bigger shows, they all have agents, they have managers, and they are getting paid, and it's, you know, there's money in podcasting in a way that there isn't in improv.
Mm-hmm. And it's an extension of their comedy life. Like,
yeah.
It's sort of like a comedy gig, but it happens to be a live podcast taping.
Yeah, and so there definitely is more people getting money at it, because as you develop your fan base, if you go do specific shows and people pay to it, you're getting the money for that.
Yeah.
You know, merchandise. I mean, really, if people are fans of you, look at the Nerdist, you know,
right?
Chris Hardwig
is doing okay too.
Doing pretty great. He just installed a TARDIS in his house.
From Doctor Who.
Yes. And it's beautiful. The light lights up, and he did a tour on Facebook, and as you open the door, it enters into his television room.
Nice.
I was going to say we should have him next year, but maybe we can't afford it.
Now he's expensive.
I don't know.
How do you guys decide who makes the cut into the festival and who doesn't?
Well, initially, it was like I went for all the comedy type shows. Tyler, because of his background in storytelling, went for the storytelling shows, and then we started maneuvering around from there. Mm-hmm. Tyler, you want to take?
Yeah, I mean, there's no set formula. I think it's sort of like you make sure the bigger shows that require more negotiation are sort of nailed down first. Then you see what your sort of palette is, and from there you build out to different neighborhoods. Like Wendy said, we're multiple neighborhoods. And you kind of listen to the neighborhood. You try to program shows that are right for that space. Again, there's no real formula. It's just that we want quality shows, and we want there to be a diversity in the lineup in almost every way that we can think of what that word means.
And we want the audiences to be able to have fun.
You know, that
be able
too.
To come in and be entertained, have a good time, and have a unique experience. We have shows happening at the Athenaeum Theater, the Promontory Theater, which is in Hyde Park, Shuba's Tavern, Steppenwolf Theater, and Vidim Theater, which is one of the hidden gems of Chicago because it's at Ashland and Augusta, but it's a 300-seat theater, and it's really beautiful. Just like the Promontory is not as well-known as it ought to be, but it's a great, great theater, a great venue as well. So,
and where's that?
That's in Hyde Park, because we wanted to be able to have some stuff on the south side, you know, because podcasting is everywhere,
so
we want some of the shows to exist everywhere. You know, what I say is, like, this is the fastest growing art form this century. So, like I say to the audience, come be a part of it.
So I should stop breakdancing and get into podcasting.
No, have a breakdancing podcast.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
The world needs more breakdancing.
And it would be great because you could just put the music on, and since it's an audio, they would just hear, like, you swirling around down
falling.
The floor.
Sure,
yeah.
And you could interview Furious Fast Furious and the Furious Five, whatever they're
called. I'll bring them on.
I know what you're talking about. It's the Chicago Podcast Festival. The producer, Jonathan Pitts, the artistic director, Tyler Green, thank you so much. Go to ChicagoPodcastFestival.org for all the deets.
All the details, yep.
Perfect.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
A quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, Steve, don't go anywhere because I found some interesting stuff on timeout.com, and it's gross things that Chicagoans do.
Oh, that's impossible.
Some I agree with, some I don't, some I don't know, and maybe listeners can help us, or you or Steve can't.
All right.
Chicago gets gross, no way around it, so these are some gross things that Chicagoans do. Eat Italian beef. I don't know how that's gross.
Is that gross?
Though amazing. Know. There's a whole stance. You need to eat it, and meat drips down your arms and your face, and you just look at that hill of napkins accumulated for one of those things.
What do they think? Do they think breathing is gross, too, apparently?
See, if you're doing an Italian beef, you need it dipped. and you need jardiniere on it, and it does kind of get you messy. And
it
you
is
go
a
through.
Messier food.
It doesn't drip down my face. Don't people need to open their mouth bigger?
Right.
Seriously. It's
problem solved. You just can't. You just came up with the solution.
Right. Sounds like it could be an app right there.
All right, this one I don't agree with, the eating Italian beef.
All right.
I don't think that's gross, but yeah. This I do.
Uh-huh.
Number two, utterly disregard public bathrooms when they fail. Remember that whole Wrigley Field debacle in April when people were leaving cups of their
yeah
all over the place because the bathrooms were failing?
Right. But I don't think, is that only Chicago who does that? I bet any other city
everywhere.
Probably does that, and it's not pleasant. But
if you go in a bar and the toilet's not working and you have to go, what are you supposed to do?
Next door neighbor.
To the bar?
Yeah. Just knock on the door. I was at the bar next door. Their bathroom is out of order. I'll be in and out in 4 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Who would say no to that?
Don't ever go to Wrigleyville because you'll be knocking on everybody's doors.
I've heard stories about what goes on. I can't even think about it. I can't even go in.
All right. Here's another disgusting thing that Chicagoans do. Eat immediately after holding on to a pole on the CTA for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You got to wash your hands,
yeah.
people.
Yeah. That one I kind of agree with.
I wash my hands after touching the buttons here in the studio.
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, they're filthy.
Right. I always see people at gas stations, like you'll see them pumping gas and then they hop in the car and they have a bag of Doritos or something. And you go, you just had gasoline on your hands 3 seconds ago.
Maybe they washed their hands.
In the time between pumping and getting in the car?
They had to go inside to get the potato chips.
No, they had them on their utility belt and they just reached down and
maybe they have Purell on their utility
maybe.
Belt.
Oh, maybe. All right, I didn't see that.
All right. All right, this bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
Sit in fabric-covered seats on the train that have almost certainly had some liquids on them before.
Yeah, think about if Dave Savini is listening, get on a bus here
no,
in Chicago.
No, no one will ever ride him again.
I can't even imagine what's on those seats. Ugh.
Why are they cloth? I gotta be honest with you.
To class it up.
I don't even like sitting in a movie theater sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
Or an airplane.
Yeah, you think about the history of those seats.
Yeah.
And what's going on.
I'm getting a body condom.
But but as the patron saint of cleanliness, Dave Savini, pointed out years and years and years ago, when you go into a hotel, that comforter is only washed like once every 6 months. You know, that thing that's on the bed,
the bedspread. Yeah.
The sheets and pillowcases, they have to change every day or two.
No, they don't have to.
I'm hoping they change it that often.
Here, do my little experiment. Take a marker, a Sharpie, and mark a corner of your bed and see if
yeah,
it's there.
It's not a good answer, is it?
Ugh. No.
Ugh.
Do it just to see. It's one thing if you've been in there, like if you're in there 3 days and you have no accidents.
Right.
Who cares if they don't change it if you're there?
Right.
But how do you know that they've been changed before you got there?
I know this is a bit of a stretch, but have you ever been in a vacation place where you can rent either scuba equipment or snorkeling equipment and you think, how many people have had that snorkel in their mouth? And I know they say they boil it.
They boil it? Yeah. Who says they boil it? They use disinfectant. We boil it and it'd melt.
I'd rather have it melt. I feel better about it if it's melted.
Yeah, especially the snorkel.
But people rent that stuff. I mean, I'm weird about renting bowling shoes, and I'm not even talking about bowling, just to wear around town.
They're very stylish.
But bowling shoes are on your feet. That's one thing. But you put this thing in your mouth.
I
want
never
a certificate
have.
From the Surgeon General saying that it's been cleaned.
Yeah, that's why I don't go snorkeling. This is from timeout.com. I'm guilty. Not washing winter jackets and boots. Winter lasts months. A cycle through the laundry lasts an hour. Why do we persist in this behavior when it's so, so easy to just stay inside one weekend and throw a load in the washing machine?
Of all the coats and things? Is that what they're suggesting?
Yeah. I mean, if a coat's dirty, I'll take it to the dry cleaners, but I don't know.
You've never washed it at home, have you?
No.
I don't think we have either. Dry cleaners, yes.
But I don't do it unless it's dirty.
Right.
I don't do it every year. It sits in the closet. I don't know.
Except that you've worn it if it's cold in Chicago half the year, and it is, so you've probably sweated it a little bit.
I glisten.
You glisten, right. But for guys listening, they have sweat in it.
I never really thought about this, and now I'm going to get my winter jacket. I usually get, like for the boys, they outgrow them, so they just get a new one every year.
That's easy.
Because those should be washed every day. Probably. Boys are gross.
Probably, yeah.
But that's a good idea, reminding yourself to get the winter jackets. I'd just take it to a dry cleaner, though.
Yeah.
And we are more infested with bed bugs than New York. Yes, it's true. Chicago's topped Orkin's list of the most bed bug ridden cities in America. But we don't choose to have that happen, timeout.com.
It's just happened.
It's just, and how
more
does that
bed bugs
happen?
And more rats.
See, but the Cubs rally and parade was overestimated at 5 million people. Maybe the bed bugs are overestimated here.
I don't know how they figured that out, that formula, but you wouldn't think we would have that distinction. You would just assume, I don't know why New York gets the brunt of these, but you would just go, well, New York's got to have way worse than us. But
really
no, they picked us.
Here. Yeah. Overestimated like the Cubs rally.
Right.
We have to take a quick break. 312-981-7200. These are disgusting things that Chicagoans do. Some we agree with, some we don't. And if you have new ones, like I said, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right. It's Bill and Wendy, and timeout.com has put things together, the most disgusting things that Chicagoans do.
That we can talk about.
Yeah, there's a bad word here, but love the crap out of Tamale Guy's tamales.
Oh, I've heard of this. I've never experienced it myself, but I've heard that they're...
That's just the best bargain in town.
Is it really,
what
Kevin?
What did I tell you? He would know who the Tamale Guy's tacos are.
Where are they? Are they in the same
somehow
place?
Somehow he's like Santa Claus. He visits every bar before closing time in
Chicago.
Genius. Yeah.
He goes to a bar?
Yeah, he's got a little cooler, or I guess it's a heater, rather.
Yeah.
Keeps them warm. They're delicious. It's like $5 for, I don't know, five. It's great.
Real? Wait, it's $5 for five tamales?
$1 each.
Yeah, you get a lot, yeah.
And they're good sized?
They're good sized, they're delicious.
Taste good?
Yeah.
Handmade, hand rolled
with
the masa.
Oh, yeah.
So why are these on the disgusting list?
Well, this, despite the fact we don't know how they were cooked, who made them, or what unregulated environment they were created in.
Or what the ingredients are.
Oh, yeah, and they're in a cooler that is at least a decade old that he's been walking around with literally all night long.
So does the author of this article go to every like hot dog factory before he eats said hot dogs? He just knows exactly what's going on there?
I would be a little leery of getting a tamale out of a cooler that some dude has at a bar.
It's a seasoned cooler, though. It's been going around for ages, so you know it's good.
Seasoned with what?
A love and age.
Is he sanctioned, like, if you have a food truck, the city of Chicago he isn't. He just does this on his own?
I think this is
He's a tamale guy.
Oh, all right. That's all I need to know.
Is it just one tamale guy, or are there numerous?
I'm pretty sure it's the same one every time. I've been to bars on the south side, like way up to the north side, west, like everywhere. He goes to all the bars.
All right, well, that is where he's very smart to stop in a bar, because if I'm there having a few drinks and, oh, do you want a tamale? I'm like, God, yes, I want a
tamale.
Who
would say no to that? That's brilliant.
Let's track down the tamale guy.
Does he say if it's steak or pork or chicken, or is that no
All he says
business?
Is tamales.
That's it.
That's it.
No ingredients.
And I say, give me this guy
here.
I'll
take five of them. Wow.
You'd be the only one who would want a selection.
I would
want to
know,
like,
what's in them.
It's either chicken, pork, or something that I don't. Yeah.
Right? You
it's
hope.
Like or red, dog. White, or, you know, whatever else.
All right. That sounds good to me for some weird reason.
I love tamales. Yeah, and I made homemade ones once, and it took forever. And you roll them up there's an art to it.
Of course.
The first few looked really weird.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They were big and lumpy, and then I got, I got it down pat. Yeah. All right, so love the heck out of the Tamale Guy's tamales. That's what they're saying is very gross.
It's disgusting about Chicagoans.
This is very gross, and I am guilty. Chicagoans do not pick up dog poop all winter long, so when spring hits, the grass is basically poop soup.
Yeah.
And it is. Ugh. Why would you go out there and pick it up in the winter? You wait till spring, and then you go get your big trash bag and the little scooper, and that's what you do.
It's just not fair. People
to
do that to the rest of society.
No,
to bring
in
your
own
dog
backyard.
Out. Oh, I guess in your own yard, I guess.
And then the first warm day when the kids are going out throwing a football, I'm like, do not use the backyard yet. I haven't cleaned it.
But don't you? I'm sure you have this. Like, we don't have a dog, but we have several neighbors that do have dogs, and they just take their dog for walks down the block, and everybody's tree is then fair game.
Well, no, you have to pick stuff up.
You would hope, but
everybody
they don't always
does. There's a law against that now.
I know.
I have got the cutest little bag container that's connects to Tiki's leash. It's made out of an old bicycle inner tube, mm-hmm. so it's unbreakable, and yeah. it's connected to his leash, and there are always bags in there, so when you need a bag...
Makes it easy.
Some people even ask us, hey, because there's nothing... It happens... once a month, I bet. Jimmy Mack takes Tiki for a late night walk and doesn't have a bag. So he has to come home and get a jewel bag to use. Oh. Or if there's somebody walking around, you go, it's really funny. I've had people, hey, ran out of bags. Do you have an extra bag?
Well, that's very helpful of you. Do your shoes match the bag or is that separate? That should be separate.
I do.
Just trying to make it more fashionable.
Tiki goes on walks throughout the whole winter, but we let him in the backyard, too, on some cold nights or something, and then you just kind of deal with it when the spring happens.
Yeah.
It's gross. Mm-hmm. Here is something else that is disgusting, lying on the sand at the dog beach where said dogs do their business, which said business is probably all over us by the time we leave. Yeah. I don't go to dog beaches. What about use absolutely terrifying bathrooms at summer music festivals? Totally guilty. It always disgusts me, but if you have to go, you have to go.
I couldn't, honestly.
If you had to go, what, would you go in your pants?
No, I've trained myself. I've trained
You're an alien. You've trained your insides.
I have totally trained my insides. You know that. I can't. I can tell you that the last time I was in a public, like an outhouse, was on the 4th of July when I was 7.
Porta potty?
Yeah. No, I think this one was more of an outhouse. It was, because it was wood and it was in the fire. It was in like the forest preserve. This was like the outhouses, like from Little House on the Prairie.
Where were you?
We were at a picnic, a 4th of July picnic, and I was 7, and that was the last time. And if I live to be 300, I'll never go in one again. There were things in there that were just otherworldly.
If you have to go, you would have to go. Would you rather just go in the woods?
I'd rather implode. I would rather just explode inside.
I don't understand you.
I can't do it.
No one likes to do it. I really only like to go at home, but there are sometimes.
Okay, do they
I'm
all
just
have
talking
this
number
thing?
One.
I wouldn't. Not number one. Not number two. Not number three. I wouldn't do it. Did you ever go in one? I don't know if they're all like this. All right. So the only thing inside the outhouse, maybe they're all like this. I've only been in one. Is there's this? There's like a. It's like
it's a hole.
Yeah.
With a toilet
it.
Seat.
And then it doesn't clean out.
It doesn't just, flush. Duh.
No, it's just there God. Forever. Nobody
well,
comes
no.
in.
Well, no, somebody, well,
nobody
I don't know
came
about.
In. There was stuff in there from when Millard Fillmore was president.
well, the porta potties, they clean them out. All right, Nick, are you listening to all this? Nick.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time, but you know the tamale guy. What's the deal? It's just one guy, right?
Yeah, it's just one gentleman. He's actually one of the nicest guys ever. The thing about him is, one, he does have options. He does give you a variety.
There you go, Bill.
Yeah, he has vegetarian. He has pork. He has chicken.
Wow.
One. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he'll tell you that. And as a person, too, that's pretty, you know, I get pretty weirded out by sanitary issues with food as well. The parchment's always new. I know the cooler you're referring to. It's absolutely true. It's like this little blue cooler you would bring to the beach. But it's really quite an interesting operation. And I have vegetarian friends. You have vegetarians. So.
Everything's cut. Flour tortillas or only corn?
It's a tamale.
They're corn.
Well,
yeah,
that wraparound thing can be made out of corn or flour.
Yeah, it's like it's a corn mixture that surrounds the filling. But I go to the Remedy in Bucktown, and he goes there every weekend. So
all right.
And what's the price of the tamale?
It's $1 each, you're right. And he changes it. Sometimes it'll be like 3 for $3, 5 for $5, 6 for $6. I don't know.
Okay, then it's $1 each. He doesn't have to say it like that.
There's no marketing meeting that took place there. And could a guy get a side order of plantains, Nick, if he wanted one?
You know, that's not an option, but you get a salsa with it. That's actually really good, obviously homemade. But, yeah, he's a great guy. $1 each one. He won't let you buy 3 for $3 if he's offering 5 for $5.
Oh, my God, I love him even more.
He's adamant about that.
And he flies. He's in and out. He sells out a cooler in minutes, so I'm sure he's...
Much like the food itself. He's in and out the same way as cuisine is.
He is a legend. Nice. You never get his name. He never has a conversation. He is just there to get his money made, and he's got a good product.
Well, now I have to start going to bars more often because I want to get the tamale
there's
guy.
There's your excuse.
I want him on a 5 for 5 night.
the Remedy in Bucktown, it's owned by the same guys that own the Owl and Estelle's. It's actually a brand new bar. It's beautiful.
And he comes in the bar, Nick? Does he walk inside there?
He walks right in and he's shouting tamales. You could be in the loudest bar there is. And
that's like foreplay to me when someone yells tamales.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you guys said, if you've been having a long night with some cocktails, you don't really care how they got there. They're just in front of you and they're fresh. And
that sounds good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good way to meet people too, is in, you know, if you go up to a group next to you and just offer it, because you never eat all of them. They are huge. So
yeah.
It makes the bar a good time for sure. He's a legend.
Thank you, Nick. You've sold us.
All right.
We want to find him.
Absolutely.
And the Remedy in Bucktown.
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you, Nick. Today's 4 for 4.
That's, that's the best part, is it always comes to a dollar each, but he won't give you 3 for 3 on a 5 to 5 day or 4 for 4 on a 3 to 3 day. He's adamant about that. That's
good
best.
For him, though. He makes the rules. He makes the tamales. Yeah. He makes the rules.
I do think you can haggle a little bit, too. I think there's been like some days where like, oh, I only got $4. He'd be like, okay, that's okay.
Oh, my God. I just love him.
It's so funny. All right, a break. We've got the news. Kim Gordon will give you the news and then more show. Eric Zorn stopping by in a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
God, you are so lucky to have a theme song.
That's some good music, Eric. That's what that is.
It's on Kevin's iPod. This is why he can pull it up so quickly.
Yeah, when you call him, that's the song that plays. Eric Zorn is here, feisty columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Any thought at all about tomorrow's election? Have you thought about it even a little bit, Eric?
It's tomorrow.
It's going to be tomorrow, yeah.
Oh,
already? I can't believe it.
Well, it is true that last week's fun and games really distracted us from the election.
At a Comey. Time
when it was all, well, no, I'm not talking
the
about
Cubs.
That. I'm talking about the
oh,
Cubs.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
I'm
that was.
I'm talking about the Cubs. There were hours that I didn't think about the election coming up, which was kind of nice, actually.
Still a few people posting on Facebook, but not as many as per usual.
So I have the polls. The story just came out. The most recent polls, the last national polls were taken. And NBC Survey Monkey, which always sounds silly to me. It reminds me of Dieter and Sprockets. Touch my Survey Monkey. Clinton up by 6 points over Trump nationally. In NBC Survey Monkey, Fox News has Clinton up by 4 points nationally. ABC News, Washington Post has a 5-point lead for Clinton.
It was bigger. It was double digits at one point.
These were all
it?
Bigger at one point, but they were all tighter at one point. And I think that it shows that all this craziness with the FBI didn't really move the needle much. Now, all this said, you know, we're looking, because of the Electoral College, we're looking at a lot of swing states. Just about everybody who talks about this says that that the path for Trump to win is very difficult. He's got to pick off a bunch of states. He's got to pick off all the swing states plus at least one of the traditionally blue states, which is why he's been campaigning in Michigan and in Wisconsin, and Minnesota, mm-hmm. places like that, where he's trying to pick up these states that are traditionally Democratic. It seems unlikely. But, you know, it's anything could happen, I suppose. But I would, you know, Wendy walked into the studio and said, please tell me Hillary's going to win. And I think she is going to win, yes. So
I'm with her, I guess. Yeah. I guess it's out. You let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
I do have to ask you this, because with the FBI investigation that was put to rest and then 11 days before the election it was brought up again, Comey has now come forward saying that he stands with his original decision, correct?
Yes.
Because there are still people on Facebook who are saying she's being investigated. It's like Facebook should be illegal during an election year.
A lot of false news on Facebook. Essentially what happened was a week ago Friday, James Comey issues a letter to the Congressional Committee, which of course leaks right away, which says that he has found some emails on Anthony Weiner's,
or something
on Anthony Weiner's laptop. I never did get exactly a number of what it was.
How does Weiner come back in to mess things up?
Just
isn't
lucky.
That crazy?
Hillary.
The lucky Weiner.
Right.
But
best hot dog stand in Chicago, by the way.
Weiner's laptop. So anyway, and people were furious at this because it breaks with tradition and protocol for the FBI to come out and say we're investigating someone right before the election, any candidate, they don't, and they also don't usually talk about investigations when they're in progress. So this was very unusual. Democrats were furious.
Was he saving his own butt in case something did come?
The thinking is that there is some disagreement in the ranks of the FBI, and he was afraid that this was going to leak, and that then there's going to be this big controversy. Is he stonewalling? Who is he protecting? Is he protecting Hillary Clinton? So he thought his best option was to come out to get out in front of this and announce that he was looking into these emails. He could have done it more artfully, too. He could have stressed that he hadn't looked at them, that he didn't know what was on them, that this is a routine bit of investigation that you would do under any circumstances when you find something like this, but that there's nothing yet that suggests that there's anything untoward in these emails. It turns out that when they looked at all these, and he announced this yesterday, that they basically were all duplicates of things they'd already looked at, and there was nothing in there that would have made them want to indict or pursue the case against Hillary. So it was basically a big never mind.
But now Trump says there's no way realistically you could go through 30,000 plus emails in a week. So he's upset that she's been let off the hook so quickly.
Well, there is a way to go through a lot of these emails. And first of all, they have to filter out all the spam duplicates and stuff, and all the penis enlarging things that Anthony Weiner was ordering and things like that.
Yeah.
Allegedly, possibly. Yeah. But it's pretty easy to find, you know, .gov emails, and then you can look at those. You can look at those very quickly to see what they are and what's in them.
Right.
And you've got a team of people doing this. And I guess in the interest of fairness, they really went 24/7 on this and looked as quickly as possible. But it's pretty easy to search emails for keywords, for stuff. So the idea that this was done in a haphazard way, that Trump is saying that something is going to develop is not. True, and what this does is this not only takes the air out of this message that he's been trying to deliver in the last few days that this is worse than Watergate, it also takes some of the air out of the idea that the Republicans in Congress, and they're probably going to hold on to the House, that they're going to spend the next 3 years just investigating Hillary Clinton's emails. There doesn't seem to be anything there.
Was it ever worse than Watergate? Was there even a moment where it was worse than Watergate?
It was never worse than Watergate. Never. No. And actually, I really recommend an article in Vox, if anyone reads that site. And they basically went through what went on with Hillary Clinton in these emails and what it means to have a private server, why she had one.
Yeah.
And the idea that there was something really sinister in it is pretty far-fetched. Essentially, she was not someone who was really technically savvy. Bill Clinton had his own email server, and this sounds like something that only high-level secret people would have, but there are a lot of companies, a lot of small businesses have their own private email servers, and it's essentially a backup computer that has the email rather than going to some distant thing in the cloud. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton had this, so she set up her private emails on the thing that Bill Clinton was using for the Clinton Foundation, which is a perfectly normal thing for a foundation to do. They got to have some place to
not illegal in any way.
No, and the kind of thing that she was doing was basically what Colin Powell had advised her to do. Colin Powell told her, and there's actually a copy of that email floating around where he said, well, everyone's going to want to be all over this is what you want to do. This is how you want to set this kind of thing up, and this is what to look out for. Do most of your business by phone because all the emails are discoverable. And, it was kind of routine. Now, the idea that she was the horrible person doing this, I think it has never been borne out. This is not even close to Watergate.
We have to take a break.
Yeah. More of this discussion. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Eric Zorn is here, and it's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Also, you look at Jay-Z, and we talked about this that night, that he might be working on it, but one of his main videos starts off with a crowd throwing Molotov cocktails at the police, and this very much anti-police message. What's that Beyonce...
Molotov cocktails?
Molotov cocktails.
I want in.
Who was that talking?
These are one of the right-wing people being interviewed on CNN.
Oh, my God.
That's been going around social media. I love that. Mazel tov cocktail.
Are you aware of, I've had several people send me this on Facebook, some because they think it's really funny, some because they think this should decide the election, that Hillary Clinton has on several occasions visited a retreat in the Caribbean known as Orgy Island?
No, I haven't
seen
that.
Oh, I saw that, too, and who cares?
It's just really funny. They explain that she's made frequent visits to the island. You can kind of guess what goes on there based on the name Orgy Island.
You've seen this on Facebook?
Several people have put it on Facebook, but it's one of those things that some people are putting it on because they think it's hysterical that that's a tactic that they're using, and other people are like, well, if you're on the
look at this
to vote for, that woman keeps going to Orgy Island.
I got a question for you guys. Have you unfriended or blocked people on Facebook and Twitter because of this election?
Yes.
I haven't.
You haven't yet?
I haven't. I just ignore. I try to ignore.
I don't feed
the trolls.
I hit a tipping point a couple of weeks ago where I decided that I just did not want my social media life to be polluted with this. And I have come to the belief that supporting Donald Trump is really almost treasonous, that this man is so dangerous to this country. He's so thin-skinned. They had to take away his Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't trust him with Twitter. And now people think he can be trusted with the nuclear codes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't have the temperament. He has no ideas that are realistic. And I think that it could be just awful for the country if he's elected. And I can't believe people are supporting him. I really can't. And I know Hillary Clinton's got her issues, but...
Well, she's at Orgy Island. She doesn't care.
She's having a blast.
Citing a well-placed source in the New York Police Department, Blackwater USA founder and retired Navy SEAL Eric Prince claims that blah, 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 and that Hillary did go to Orgy Island.
6 times, it says in most of the stories. She has been a 6-time visitor to Orgy Island.
Can you imagine if Hillary Clinton were on her third husband and had 5 kids with these 3 husbands and was talking about grabbing guys by the genitals? She would be even close to this? I mean, it is really astounding what's going on.
Wendy and I discussed this.
I'm unfriending that guy, by the way.
You should. Wendy and I discussed this about a week ago. I can't wait. Should Donald Trump lose, I can't wait for the concession speech. I think this will be the greatest concession speech of all time.
I don't think you're getting one.
You don't think there will be one? What do you think will happen?
He has never proven to be good at admitting he was wrong, apologizing, conceding anything gracefully. He's never done anything that I can see gracefully. So I can't imagine him offering a graceful concession speech, which is what
political
traditions call for. No matter how angry you are or how frustrated you are, you concede gracefully for the good of the country.
Side bet. Does he or does he not mention that the election is rigged should he lose?
100% mentions it and says, you people, you picked a, you're going to be in trouble. You'll regret it.
Yeah.
I don't know that he'll say
you picked her. He may say that we're going to call for investigations. This fight isn't over.
Right.
And waste time and money and resources.
I can't imagine him conceding. I really can't.
Do you think there'll be any Mazel Tov cocktails?
I think so. Those are just Jewish witticisms thrown angrily.
Not only will he not accept it, will his supporters? That's the big question I have.
That is a tough question. I don't. If you're someone who's been worked up to believe that this election is rigged, that Hillary Clinton is a crook, and that everything has been slanted against you, what do you have to lose if you're so angry?
And how do we heal this? And can we heal this come Wednesday?
Well, that's why it has to be up to people like Trump and Rudy Giuliani and Chris Christie and the people who have been fanning these flames to try to douse them. And that would be the patriotic thing to do, to say, you know, look, we lost this round, but the political fight goes on. We're going to hold Hillary Clinton to account. We are going to run again, and we're going to run congressional candidates and senatorial candidates in 2 years. We're going to run someone for president in 4 years. This isn't over, but this election is over. We congratulate the winner. We're going to move on. That would be the thing to say. That would be the thing that
why don't you tweet that to him?
Because he's not on Twitter anymore.
His people still are.
They took it away from him.
Does he remain a voice in politics? Should he lose, will we see him say, we're going to take another look at this in four years?
I don't think so. One is he's kind of on the old side, right? Is he 71? Steve Bertrand would know. There he is. How old is Trump?
I think he's 71.
71.
Or
I think at that point, you're probably too old to run.
Yeah.
Wendy's going on this her little magic device.
Well, will his endorsement mean anything 70. To future candidates?
70. No, I don't. I think so.
You don't think so?
Tends to be losers. Like they tend to go away. Like Mike Dukakis went away. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and even Al Gore went away.
Yeah.
For the most part,
the party almost wants you to because it reminds people of not being victorious.
I mean, the last defeated presidential candidate who came back was Nixon. Right? I mean, it's been a long time since he lost in 60 and came back and won in 68. I don't think that Trump. And first of all, he'll be too old, I think, in 4 years even to run again.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think that'll happen. I think that there will be some sort of stain of shame that will attend to him also. The Republican Party is really mortified by him, and some people are sticking by him because they feel like it's the only thing they can do besides vote for Hillary Clinton,
who they
find it unacceptable. But they're not happy about that.
Yeah.
And there's a school of thought that says that the best thing for the Republican Party would be for Hillary to win, for that coalesces the Republicans, that gets them a lot of momentum in 2 years. They can maybe take back the Senate if they happen to lose it this time, and gives them a good run at 2020. So,
quick little thing, Bernie Sanders, 75 years old, and he ran.
Right.
So it's possible.
It's possible.
How did he do?
He did not win.
He was beaten, so.
He did not win. That's Eric Zorn.
It was rigged.
It was rigged. That's what it is.
It was a little.
I know.
You can read Eric Zorn in the Tribune. You can visit his stand at Orgy Island. It's always open for your shopping community.
Always 24/7.
Yep. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate
nice
it. We'll find out what Steve has
It'll
next.
It'll be very exciting next week.
It will be very exciting. Something besides this.
Huh?
I know. Stay where you are. It's more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Oh, thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. What's so funny?
Oh, Steve Bertrand sabotages the studio, you know.
Sometimes he does.
Every time.
That's the fun that Steve Bertrand brings.
That's not fun to me. He does it up here, so don't take it personally.
Buttons that should be on are turned off. Buttons that are off should be turned on.
Yes.
There's battery acid everywhere. I don't know what he does.
Pain.
Oh. And yet we love him.
Speak for yourself. Why is that?
We like him, and yet we like him, and yet we tolerate him.
That's better.
All right. All right. The election, as it turns out, is tomorrow, Wendy. We will choose a new president tomorrow.
Now, you're laughing at me when I said I can't believe it's tomorrow already. I feel like we've been going through this for over a year, but we have
been.
It is over a year.
It's a year and a half. I thought it was
108 years.
It sure seemed like it.
Everything's 108. I get it.
Which seemed farther ago, the last time the Cubs won the World Series or the beginning of this particular election? About the same,
the
wouldn't
election.
You agree? All right, so every year what happens is, or every 4 years, I guess I should say, when one candidate is more overpowering than the other, which I guess you kind of have here, you get a bunch of people, mostly celebrities, saying, if that guy wins, I'm leaving the country.
And they never, ever, ever stick to it. Have you noticed this?
No.
Ever.
There's
Alec
no
Baldwin was supposed to have left.
I know.
When who?
Well, Alec Baldwin said he was going to leave if... Who was going to be president for him to leave? But that didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
He got his choice. But Ted Nugent was the one who said, with Barack Obama's last election, if he's elected president again, I'll either be in jail, out of the country, or dead. And he's none of the three.
When in doubt, whip it out.
I guess. Got me a rock and roll band.
It's a free-for-all.
So here are the celebrities that, if Donald Trump wins tomorrow, these celebrities will no longer live in the United States because they've announced publicly that they will leave the country if Donald Trump wins. You will not have to worry about Lena Dunham anymore, Wendy. She will be out of the country.
I never did, really.
She's one of the stars of Girls, the creator of Girls on HBO. Lena Dunham has been one of the most active celebrity Clinton supporters out there, but she says she will move to Canada if Donald Trump wins. She says, I know a lovely place in Vancouver, and I can get my work done from there.
She did a really funny video about the pantsuit.
Oh, did she?
Yeah. But then she took the pantsuit off, and she had some celebrities in there, and they're like, you're ruining your message when you take... And she was dancing in, like, granny panties.
Oh.
And
yeah, that's off target for me. You know, you won't have Samuel L. Jackson around anymore. He's going to leave the country.
Well, then he's going to have to give up that ad he does.
Which ad?
I don't know. He does a TV commercial.
Does he? Samuel L. Jackson has told Jimmy Kimmel that in the wake of a Trump victory, he would, I'm going to clean this up a little bit, Wendy, so I don't offend you, he will move his black butt to South Africa. Those are his words, kind of. I changed one word.
See, no more
Samuel L. Jackson. The L standing for left, left the country. Miley Cyrus will no longer be living in America.
Again, I don't care about any of these people.
Trump's Super Tuesday victory in the primaries left Miley Cyrus distraught. She said she hasn't said where she will go, but she promised on Instagram that, and I quote here, I am moving if this is my president and I don't say things that I don't mean.
Right.
So we will no longer have Miley Cyrus living in America.
Can you please save this list? Because a couple weeks into the, you know, if Donald Trump should win, we have to book each and every one of these people and say, so where'd you move?
Yeah, you're in Canada now?
Liar.
Where are you? Cher is leaving.
Again.
This is her farewell tour.
Her 18th?
I was in second grade when it started, and I'm older now. Cher has a history of feuding with Donald Trump even before he announced his candidacy, and has been often asked about what she thinks about his attempts to become the president. Cher tweeted that if he wins, she will move to Jupiter.
Isn't she already there?
Canada's an easy move, but Jupiter, you got to put some thought into it. Natasha Lyonne will be leaving.
Oh, no, because I love her on Orange
She's
is
Orange
the New,
is the
Black.
New Black. Right.
She won't go, because then how can she work on
She's
that show?
She's in jail. She can't just leave jail. Natasha Lyonne might not leave the country, but when asked by Stars where she might go, she said she might check herself into a mental hospital. All right, well, that you can find those locally.
George, that's not even funny.
George,
that's inappropriate and bad.
That she would say that?
Yes.
George Lopez would be leaving.
What's he done for me lately?
George Lopez told TMZ that he would move south of the border if Trump won. Now, there's a wall going up, so he better do it before they put the wall up, because nobody comes in, nobody goes out. It's like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, but way worse situations.
Far worse.
I'd rather be locked into a big candy factory.
Either way, there's orange people. George Lopez told TMZ that he would move south of the border if Trump won and that other Latinos would come with him. He says if he wins, he would have to worry about immigration and we will all go back. So no more George Lopez, no more Al Sharpton.
Again?
You don't seem upset about any of these, Wendy. Al Sharpton said back in February that he had reserved his ticket to leave if Trump won and that he would support anyone necessary to beat him. Al Sharpton. We would also lose Neve Campbell.
Again, I mean, I like Neve Campbell.
Party
and all,
of five.
But where's she been lately? I
guess
she's
on House
back.
Of Cards
yeah,
now.
I guess.
She's on House of Cards.
Well, then she won't be anymore. These people aren't leaving.
But now keep in mind with Neve Campbell, she's a Canadian. So it doesn't, I mean, I guess she's living here now, so it does affect her. But
oh, well, she can go back there. She probably has dual citizenship.
Probably. House of Cards star Neve Campbell, a natural born Canadian citizen. So for her, moving to another country is very easy, and she said that she's ready to do it. We would lose Chelsea Handler.
I don't
care. You don't like Chelsea Handler?
I don't dislike her. Can we talk to Patrick real quickly, and then we'll find out more about Chelsea Handler?
Yeah.
Hi, Patrick.
I think you hit the nail on the head. It's easy. Some of us are going to be stuck here if that happens.
I know, and I really don't want other people to be able to bail, because we can't.
we can.
I'm not.
My purpose was for calling was to state that there's much more than just voting for president that affects our country. And I believe that those people who feel that they should leave the country are throwing the baby out with the bathwater, just like those who are voting for Trump.
But they don't really. Everybody who says this, Patrick, the point we're trying to make is it's all talk. No, I don't think anybody, because in the past people have said that, oh, if he's president, I'm leaving.
How
Nobody
is Cher
does.
Going to Jupiter?
She's
Could
not
you
going
answer
to Jupiter.
That?
She can't go to Jupiter.
Well, we agree with you, Patrick. Have you voted yet?
I am voting tomorrow, and I will be involved with, you know, the rest of them if I can, possibly. I'm voting for progressives myself.
Are you? The soup? Yeah.
That's
soup?
Progresso.
Oh, Progresso. I apologize. Progressive is an insurance
I'd rather
company.
Have soup for a president. Who doesn't
That'd
like soup?
That'd be great. Make soup president. All right, I'm in. All right, well, Patrick, good luck. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
No more Chelsea Handler. She told Kelly Ripa on Live with Kelly and Regis or Michael or whoever's available that day that her plans to move aren't just words.
Right.
She said she has already bought a house in Spain and she is ready to go if necessary.
All right, Eric wants to talk. Hi, Eric.
Hi, you guys got to stop with this story. I was very much on the fence. I was not intending to vote for Trump, but the more you cover all these meetings, you're convincing me to do it.
You want to get rid of Al Sharpton and Lena
Miley
Dunham.
Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus.
There are some we'd be better off without.
Agreed.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks.
We've influenced Eric. Just a couple more really quickly. No more. Oh, this one, Wendy, if this one doesn't change your mind... Barbara Streisand would no longer be living in America if Donald Trump wins.
Will be very upset.
Everybody will be upset.
I don't care. I haven't gone to see her.
Barbara Babs Streisand has been hitting the campaign trail for Hillary, but she is also ready to abandon ship if her campaign fails. She said she would decide between moving to Australia or Canada if Trump takes office. You don't want to lose Barbara Streisand.
Does she want to stay in the empire? Is that what
it is? Yeah, she'd stay in the empire.
Somebody wants to know if Cher's moving to Jupiter, Florida.
Maybe. That's possible. It's very nice there. Now, this one, again, you don't want to lose Bryan Cranston, do you?
I'd rather not, but again,
you don't want to lose Bryan Cranston.
Can't they work from whatever country they're at?
I guess so.
So really, this is stupid.
But would the Dalton Trumbo movie have been as good if it took place in Toronto? I don't think so. In the final days of the campaign, Bryan Cranston has added his name to this exodus list. He says, I would definitely move.
And start doing meth.
Right.
You know, it's really true, though. There's no one there that that it would impact.
It would tear you up.
That would impact people. I mean, who would impact anyone anyway, but.
Who would have
Oprah.
To speak up? Well, Oprah, obviously.
I don't even
obviously.
Care if Oprah goes. I don't care.
Who would have to speak up, though, Steve, where you would go, oh, no, this is serious. We can't lose dot, dot, dot.
Jonathan Taves. If
Jonathan
he would
Taves.
Ever become Canadian, I think that would impact
All right.
my vote.
All right.
What?
We don't want him to leave.
But think of it, really. That's, I mean.
Yeah.
No one.
It's sort of like, okay, go ahead. I'll tell you what. Why don't you go even if she wins? You bought the house? It's
just
in Spain? Go.
Spain is nice.
And a lot of these people, I mean, some of them are working, and Bryan Cranston for sure.
Bryan Cranston's working like crazy.
I know, but it's like we haven't talked about Bryan Cranston today, so right. now all of a sudden we are.
Right.
Just
right.
deal with it.
And then one more, but I'm not sure he understands fully. Spike Lee says that if Donald Trump wins, he would move back to the Republic of Brooklyn. But that's...
I'm going to throw up.
I know he's kidding, right? Because it's still
under
U.S.
I don't know that he's kidding.
That's still under U.S. rule, Spike. You know that, right?
I don't think he does.
All right. So we will be without those celebrities and maybe more.
Jupiter built the wall to keep Cher out. That's what somebody said. What's everybody hating on Cher for?
She can turn back time.
She can. She's the only one.
I know. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then there's more show. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. A lot of your big stars would be leaving the country if Donald Trump wins. They have announced that if he is the next president, Lena Dunham, Samuel L. Jackson, Miley Cyrus, Cher, Natasha Lyonne, George Lopez, Al Sharpton, Neve Campbell, Chelsea Handler, Barbara Streisand, Bryan Cranston, Spike Lee, and Jay Cutler will all be leaving the United
no,
States.
No, you're not looking.
And
have
Kevin
they
Hart.
Also committed to stop making money off of Americans when they leave?
Yes.
That would be nice, right?
If that's how it goes.
If they're genuine, I think they should no longer have their
blood money
product available for
yes
American
for American
purchase.
Consumption.
773 says, "I'll vote for anyone that can get rid of the Kardashians or the Duggars, whatever they are."
I'm with them. I'm on board.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Supreme Court Justice, is going to New Zealand.
Did she say that? I didn't see.
I
never
got a couple
heard
of texts
no
saying
way.
That.
Wow,
she didn't say. She's going to move out of the country? No.
She's got a fairly decent job. I don't know why she'd leave. Wow.
I got to make sure that's true.
See if that's true, because that's the first I'm hearing of it. Steve, I can't think. I asked you the question, who would have to be on this list where you go, okay, now that's serious. Nobody's coming to mind for me, because nobody follows through with this.
No.
They just say it. Nobody actually leaves the country.
There was a story that CBS News or someone, they interviewed someone the night that Jimmy Carter lost to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And she was a White House staffer, and she was crying in her beer at a bar, and she said, I'm going to have to move to Canada.
Oh.
She told the Washington Post or New York Times, something like that. And then, so just recently, the news agency tracked her down and found her and asked what she did. And I think she did move to Canada.
She did. Someone did follow through.
They did a story on all of these people who moved out of the country.
Wow.
None of them were rich actors.
No, I didn't think so. But Alec Baldwin in the past has threatened that. And like I said earlier, Ted Nugent said last time, if Barack Obama's president again, he'll either be in jail or in another country or
John
dead.
Stewart says he's leaving, too.
Oh, would John Stewart leave? That's significant.
See, people don't say that.
Right, it ruins your credibility.
Because you're not going to. Maybe he is. Amber Rose, who cares?
Amber Rose.
Okay, there we go.
That's the one. I knew Steve would have a boiling
Ruth
point.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
It's Amber Rose.
The Supreme Court justice might abandon the U.S. for New Zealand. Her quote, I can't imagine what the country would be with Donald Trump as our president. Now it's time for us to move to New Zealand, she told the New York Times in July.
You know what's weird about that? I always get Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Amber Rose mixed up. I can never remember who's who.
Whoopi Goldberg. See ya. Don't let
she
the door hit
would
you.
Would she leave?
That's what she says. Oh, Raven no. Simone.
Raven Simone, I would drive her to the airport if she was leaving. I would take a sick day and drive her to the airport.
I would say, and I'd say, who are you again?
Well, she's on The View.
Aren't they both? Whoopi, too.
Whoopi is also.
So then The View will have to move.
Oh, don't say that.
Chloe Sevigny?
70.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's how she said it.
She would seek asylum in Canada.
Oh.
Canada, as she says.
Canada.
She said she would seek asylum?
Yeah, specifically Nova Scotia.
Oh, it's very nice there. Good fishing.
Someone should explain to her what asylum is, I guess.
She thinks it's part of the barn.
All right, well, really, no
we're
one...
We're losing a significant chunk of our show business community, Wendy. This is panic time.
If Donald Trump loses, will he move out of the country?
I don't know if that happens.
How is he going to even deal with it if he loses?
Because he doesn't... That's a hard word for him to say.
He's never been told no, or no, you can't do it, or you're not going to win.
Yeah. I don't know. That's why I keep saying this concession speech will be the most interesting of all time. I mean, you know how he's prone to hyperbole. Everything he does is the biggest and the best. This will be the biggest, best concession speech. Huge. Of all time.
I think it's going to be the hugest disaster.
Can't wait. If it happens that way, we have a couple of options. If it happens that way, I want to hear the concession speech.
I can't. I really am just... I don't know if I'm looking forward to tomorrow or dreading it.
Yeah.
But it's really exciting.
Right. It is. All right. A quick break. Steve with the news. And then there's more show coming. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. All right. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Kevin, Steve, I don't know about you, but Bill has been talking about these Omaha steaks and this bill package and that you get all this meat and you have not shared with any of us.
No, I'm very, very careful to make sure that I get all the food that I mention. And I know that that's probably not the best way to do it because I see your mouth watering and Kevin's mouth watering when I talk about this. But if I give you some, that's less for me. And I can't really subscribe to that.
Are you hearing this, Todd? Todd Simon is CEO of Omaha Steaks. Bill is selfish. That's how good your product is.
Well, thanks for saying so. I'm hearing all of it, and I'm just eating it up. No pun intended.
All right. Omaha Steaks has been around for quite a long time. Bill raves about it. And you have something going on that I might be interested in. Thanksgiving dinner, I prepare it. I have both the in-laws and my family over every year, but I've recently had knee surgery, and I don't think I want to go through all the trouble of cooking everything. So what is an option?
Yeah, so you know, Omaha Steaks is a nearly 100-year-old family business founded by my great-great-grandfather in 1917, and we've evolved from being sort of a small custom butcher shop to really providing the greatest holiday meals, gifts, everything you need for entertaining. And so what you're talking about is how we've made Thanksgiving easy. And we've got two different choices. We have a Thanksgiving dinner that's based around, of course, the traditional 10-pound whole-basted turkey, and that's got sage dressing and a green bean casserole and smashed red potatoes and turkey gravy and even a pumpkin pie for dessert. And, you know, that can serve, you know, 8-10 people, and its sale price is just $160 if you go to omahasteaks.com.
And I want to, Todd, if I may, I want to point out that that same meal is normally over $300, and you're doing this at Thanksgiving time, the best time to get this, and it's half the price. It's $160. It's usually $334. Now it's $160.
Yeah, and we're doing that because, you know, we know that there's a lot of people out there, like you just mentioned, who, you know, they want to provide the awesome family Thanksgiving meal, but the amount of work that it takes to do it is just, you know,
it's getting old
to the top. Yeah, exactly. And we've got another one that's based around ham. So some people, you know, a lot of people like to do ham instead of turkey for Thanksgiving. So we've got a similar meal. It's got an 8-pound ham. It's got roasting vegetables, potatoes au gratin, cornbread and sausage stuffing, and a 40-ounce cheesecake sampler. That's regularly $287. We're selling that one for $150. So you can take your choice when you go to omahasteaks.com between the Thanksgiving dinner or the simple holiday celebration, which is the ham dinner.
Which I was telling Bill off the air, if I'm doing this myself and I, you know, would probably get a 20-pound turkey, so you could get two of these, and that's $320 for two of the 10-pound turkeys, I probably spent $800 on all the stuff I bought and the time I put into it. So what a great deal.
Well, it's amazing. You know, thank you very much for saying that. You know, we did a nationwide survey, and we found that the two top reasons people will order a complete holiday meal is just what you're describing, convenience. And the second one is time savings. And the third one is efficiency with their money, because think of all the things that you buy that you don't use all of. You know, I need one cap full of molasses, and I got to buy a whole bottle of molasses, and then it sits around, you know, until next year, and then I throw it away and buy a new one.
Exactly.
So that happens a lot, you know.
Todd, I'm looking at this list, and it really is everything you would possibly need for a great Thanksgiving, except for uncomfortable dinner conversation topics. Could you just include a couple of those to make my aunts and uncles uncomfortable?
Well, fortunately, we won't have to talk about politics.
No, that'll be over, thankfully.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you said your grandfather started this company about 100 years ago?
It was actually my great-grandfather. So I'm the fifth generation.
All right, and did it start out with just steaks? Because now I'm looking at the website, and there are lobster tails, bass, swordfish. I mean, you guys have everything.
Yeah, so we started out just selling steaks. In fact, the original name of the company was Table Supply Meat Company, and the first headline in our ad that we placed in the New Yorker magazine in 1959 was "Get some great Omaha steaks from Table Supply Meat Company." So we used that as the name of our product up until 1965, and then we changed the name of the whole company to Omaha Steaks. And at that time, we started to add things to branch out from just steak, because we gained the trust that we could deliver steaks around the country in perfect condition. And we started to add things like chicken breasts and lobster tails and different kinds of desserts, and started to build really the first meal delivery through the mail business in 1959.
Todd, I tried you guys out at Father's Day. We were running a special here on the station, so we had a whole bunch of people over for Father's Day, and we grilled up the steaks. And every single person there at our gathering, every one of them said, "Where did you get these? These are the best I've ever had." That says a lot.
Oh, well, thank you for saying so. You know, Father's Day is kind of like second Christmas for us. In fact, so many kids and moms like to give Omaha Steaks as an impressive Father's Day gift. One of the things we know about food gifting in general is that people today, they really like experiences. And when you give Omaha Steaks, you're not just giving meat in a box. You're giving a chance for someone to bring their family and friends together around the table,
sure,
have whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable dinner table conversation. But it's the ability to bring people together. And we see that people really like gifts for the holidays. I mean, people give gift baskets. They give wine. They give chocolates. And, of course, but we found that 70% of potential gift recipients would enjoy receiving a food gift.
Yep.
You mentioned chocolates and meat. Tell us a little about these Belgian chocolate T-bones. This sounds like crazy good.
Mm-hmm. So that's new this year. We actually have a really delicious Belgian chocolate, and we formed it into the shape of a T-bone. We just thought it would be a cute addition to the Omaha Steaks line. I mean, if anybody can get away with selling chocolate in the shape of steaks, it would have to be Omaha Steaks.
Just don't grill them, Wendy. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah, exactly.
Do not grill them.
But they're great on s'mores.
Oh, yeah. Of course they would be.
How cute is that, though? And Thanksgiving dinner, I'm looking on the website at omahasteaks.com. 8 days left for standard shipping. So get your orders in now. You could also pay extra if you delay, but who wants to pay extra? You want to go standard shipping, correct?
Exactly. Well, exactly. But, you know, some people like to plan last minute, and we've got two-day shipping and overnight shipping available. And you know what? It probably will still be a bargain compared to the $800 it would cost you to make Thanksgiving dinner, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing, Todd. I don't understand how you do this, but it's an incredible array of various types of foods, and then the prices are just really, really economical. Usually you sacrifice one of the other, but you guys aren't doing that.
No, our goal is to really deliver value to our customers. That's why we've been in business for over 100 years, and we want people to make us part of their lives and use us on a regular basis, whether it's for gifts or whether it's for elegant entertaining like for Thanksgiving, or if it's just for everyday dining. You know, my kids like steak, you know, on a Tuesday night, you know, or burgers. We sell a lot of burgers, and people come to us for those all the time year round.
All right, Todd Simon, CEO of Omaha Steaks. Before we let you go, I would like you to tell Bill that he has to share with us.
Nope. I won't do that.
Not only share with you, but share with the audience, because I think we've got something to give away.
Well, that's you sharing with the audience. It's called The Tasteful Gift, and why don't you tell us what one lucky listener is going to win in a moment?
Well, this is a great assortment of Omaha Steaks. It has two filet mignons, two top sirloin steaks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 potatoes au gratin, 4 caramel apple tartlets, that's our most popular dessert, and just to make sure that that cooking steaks is completely simple, we've included a package of Omaha Steak seasoning, and that we're selling that right now on our website. The regular price is $140. We're selling it for $69.99, and one lucky listener is going to win one.
All right. Let's do caller 10. Shall we do that?
Caller 10 right now, 312-981-7200. You will taste everything that Todd just described to you. It's an incredible value, and it's yours for the winning. Be caller 10.
And if other people would like to order steaks or perhaps your Thanksgiving or holiday celebration, omahasteaks.com. And is there a toll-free number they can call?
There is. You can call 800-228-9055. And we also have a number of retail stores in the Chicagoland area. So just go to the website. You can find the addresses for those. And I, too, am very impressed with the Cubs' victory this year.
Good. We like hearing that.
You should do a Cubs steak.
Yes.
With, like, a little branding iron. You could brand the little Cubs logo.
Well, you know, the whole Omaha Cubs connection is not lost on me.
That's a minor league affiliate of the
really?
Cubs. Yeah.
I didn't know. It was lost on me.
And the family that owns the team is originally from Omaha.
So. Oh, how about that? Yeah. It all
Pretty
ties
awesome.
In. Todd, great to talk to you. You continue to dazzle us with the incredible array of foods, all great tasting, and the prices are always right. So everybody go to omahasteaks.com and taste for yourself how good they are.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, you guys.
Thanks for giving away the tasteful gift, because Jim from Lombard just scored it, and he's going to look pretty good when he's got this good steaks to share and pork chops. Listen to what's in here. Filet mignon, 2 of them. 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, potatoes au gratin, which I would get it just for that. There's mm-hmm. 4 of them, enough for me. And 4 caramel apple tartlets along with a packet of Omaha steak seasoning. Thank you so much for providing that. We appreciate it, Todd.
All right. Well, thank you guys.
Absolutely.
And 1-800-228-9055, or you can stop in one of the Omaha Steak stores, and you can find that at omahasteaks.com.
We'll take a quick break, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Did you see the Cubs? First of all, they won the World Series last week, and then some of them were on Saturday Night Live.
I'm glad you brought this up.
What'd you think?
I did see it. They were all over the place. They were in Disney. Did you see them in the Disney parade?
Yeah. They were at the Blackhawks game last night.
And then, well, they went from Disney on Friday to SNL Saturday night.
But is it the
different
same?
People.
It's different members of the Cubs, right?
Although David Ross was on SNL and at the Hawks game last night. Wasn't he there last night?
I don't think he was at the – I don't remember his name being
called. Kevin, can you find out who was at the Hawks game? Because you had Anthony Rizzo.
Yes.
Dexter Fowler.
Yes.
David Ross.
Right.
Bill Murray.
Yes.
Singing.
And dancing.
Yeah, that was weird. Bill Murray should have been part of that, too. I would have liked to have seen that.
Are you sure?
Yes. It's supposed to be funny on SNL, isn't it?
Yes.
So to see him twerking like Anthony Rizzo, who taught him how to twerk?
Now, because I'm not myself a twerker, Wendy. I don't know if they were doing a really good job or a really bad job. I was somewhere in the middle.
Well, I am bothered by a lot of people on Facebook who said, oh, why would the Cubs stoop so low and do such a stupid bit? I would have refused to do it. They're on SNL. It's a goofy, it was a silly bit. A.D. Bryant was really a lucky person in this.
It was a scene where an older woman was celebrating a birthday.
No, her bachelorette
party. Her bachelorette party, right.
She was 88 and she was going to get married again.
Right.
So they had a surprise bachelorette party for her, and the surprise of the bachelorette party killed her.
They had 2 strippers, and then the stripper said that because she was a certain designated customer, they also, this included a dance from members of the Cubs. So then you had, as you mentioned, 3 members of the Cubs who came out and did like a strip dance.
But she was dead.
She was dead. Right. There's that element too. So they were dancing for
so
a woman
she missed,
who had
like
recently
the, yeah.
passed away. And the dancing was very provocative, Wendy. Very provocative.
Rizzo was twerking big time. His butt was shaking so swiftly.
I'll tell you, at some point, Anthony will no longer play Major League Baseball, and he'll think to himself, is there a second career I could pursue? He could be a dancer.
He totally could be a dancer.
He could be a dancer.
Their singing was pretty good. And again, people are complaining they don't sound very well. You guys, it's the Cubs. They get to go on SNL. This was a dream for them, as well as winning the World Series.
I bet if you're any of those guys, you think to yourself, okay, my career path, they've chosen sports, they've chosen baseball. You don't in a million years think, and we'll probably be featured on an episode of Saturday Night Live. It doesn't play out that way, except that it did.
And there I think, is it Chris Bryant supposed to be on Jimmy Kimmel tonight, I think?
Oh, is he? I didn't know that. Yeah.
Jimmy Fallon or Kimmel? One of the Jimmys. What do you have there, Kev?
No, Ben Zobrist, I think, is going to be on. I know Ben Zobrist is going to be on one of the shows.
Well,
tonight.
I have Jimmy Kimmel will be on with Chris Bryant, I believe, tonight. And then you were asking about the Hawks at the Cubs.
Yeah, who was at the Cubs at the Hawks game?
Ricketts, Crane Kenny, sales guy that I don't know the name of. I'm sorry, I didn't catch it. Schwarber, Montgomery, Contreras, and Hayward.
Okay.
All in a pregame ceremony.
All right. I'm trying to find where Ben Zobrist is, because I know he's on one of the late night talk shows tonight, too. It really is incredible exposure.
But isn't it because all these people on these shows have so many writers that hailed from Chicago?
Yeah, that's why.
Did you see our buddy Colin Jost with his World Series Cubs hat on?
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of people that are Chicago transplants.
Absolutely.
On these shows, because I'm trying to think if I think the White Sox had done a couple of appearances somewhere. I don't know that they were on SNL.
I know they weren't on SNL. I was trying to think of if any White Sox players did any national TV, and I don't remember it. It's possible, but I don't remember them doing any of the late night shows.
Yeah, of course the Cubs get all the exposure. And it's a bigger story.
Well,
108 years.
It in a weird way, even though here in Chicago we have equal access to both the Cubs and the White Sox, nationally, it's not really that way.
You hear the Cubs. Chicago, because everywhere I've been, oh, where are you from, Chicago? How about those Cubs? Well, yeah, okay, but I'm a Sox fan.
Right.
Who?
Right.
There's another team?
Ben Zobrist will be on Jimmy Fallon's show tonight.
And Chris Bryant on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah. How about that? Isn't that weird?
Again, a Chicago connection to all of these shows.
Yeah. Stephen Colbert with no Cubs, even though he spent a bunch of his career here in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Why doesn't he have a Cub?
Because the election's tomorrow, messing everything up.
Oh. Maybe that's what it is. That could be what it is.
After tomorrow. Well, and are we going to know how long do you think it's going to take to tally the votes?
That's a good question. Steve, you would probably know more about this than me, but normally you know, it depends on the election. Some elections are a lot closer than others. This one's kind of unpredictable, although Hillary Clinton is favored in pretty much every poll. The numbers are still pretty close. So I guess you'd imagine kind of late at night they should know by late tomorrow night, don't you think?
I can't remember the last election when we got the most of the—I mean, nothing's 100% permanent, but they get a lot of the results in, and they're able to speculate. Steve will tell us more—
When he wakes up. He's taking just a small nap.
Okay.
It's all right. We'll take a break. Steve will be up and give you the news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I had asked if the White Sox had ever been on Saturday Night Live, and Scotty Pods was. Scotty Podsednik. Kevin, you asked me this morning, too. He was in a little Weekend Update sketch with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, and they were trying to go, oh, my God, yeah, we're Sox fans, and really, where are you from? And they both just said, you know, oh, I live in Wrigleyville, and I live in Evanston, and Scotty Podsednik was saying, you know, well, usually people on the north side are Cubs fans. You can just admit it. And they're like, no, come on. We used to hang out in the gritty places. And they said, like, Ann Sather's Bakery, the American Girl Store, Walgreens. And then they admitted that they were Cubs fans, and that was it.
Oh, that's something. I don't remember that.
And I thought, like, Joe Creedy was somewhere, because I stalked him for a while. And I think he was on Letterman's show, I want to say. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know.
But the Cubs are getting plenty of exposure, as you would imagine. It's America's team.
Did you just get an allergy all of a sudden right now?
I don't have any allergies. Mm-mm. Not me.
If you have an extra one, can I have one?
Yeah, do you need an allergy?
I can get you an allergy. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
If Trump wins, I'm going to get an allergy.
Doesn't seem very committed. Did you see the uproar going on over at Starbucks?
No, what's going on
People
now?
People are furious. For those of you who don't know, Starbucks is a coffee chain.
A coffee chain. Thanks, Grandpa.
There's one wherever you are right
Can
now.
Can I sit on your knee?
Look to your left and your right, and you'll probably see at least one, maybe two Starbucks. People are furious because they every year they come out with holiday cups, and this year it's a two-pronged attack. You're going to get the usual cup, but now they also have a special cup that they've just put out. And the purpose of this cup is, what you see on the cup is, a whole bunch of faces. Let me see if it says exactly how many faces. I don't see it. Oh, over 100 people are drawn on the cup. And what they've done is they've drawn these people's faces with one continuous line. So the whole cup has a bunch of people's faces, all one line. The artist who did it is an artist named Shogo Ota.
It's very hard because the cup is, you know, cylindrical. So
right.
You have to go around
right.
it.
Right. Yeah? It's not easy.
You have to spin it while you're drawing.
While you're drawing. And what their message here is that we're all connected. It's one line connecting all these faces. So they're subliminally saying, look, we're all one. We're all connected. It's
I kind of like that concept.
I like yeah. that, too.
Except that seam where the cup is glued, that's the wall.
Right. You have to look very closely to see it. Well, people are saying that this is, and I quote, political brainwashing.
Oh, my God.
Let me explain or try
it's
to explain.
It's coffee, people.
It's a coffee cup. Earlier this week, Starbucks began serving its seasonal holiday drinks in new green cups that were meant to promote the message of unity. But the cups are having the opposite effect, causing an uproar among some customers who are accusing the coffee chain of, like I said, political brainwashing. On Tuesday, just this past Tuesday, a week before the election, Starbucks rolled out their green cups that feature an illustration by Shogo Ota.
And usually they were red last year, so green
well,
is
still,
different.
They're still going to be red. That's coming. That's
okay.
still a week away. So that's a tradition that they won't change. So
are you choked? You
I'm
just
sad.
Got an allergy.
I'm
All of
sad.
A sudden, your eyes are watering.
No, it makes me sad.
You have a frog in your throat?
Yes. It features this illustration by Shogo Ota showing the faces of more than 100 people, all drawn with, like I mentioned, a single continuous line. During a divisive time in our country, Starbucks wanted to create a symbol of unity as a reminder of our shared values and the need to be good to one another, so said Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz in a statement. But on social media, responses to these cups were mixed. Some Twitter users were connecting the green cups to Hillary Clinton.
How?
Who Starbucks, I'm not sure. I guess this answers part of that, but... Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz has endorsed Hillary Clinton for president, but if you look at the cup, you're not.
I don't think
thinking
Hillary
that.
Clinton.
No, would you? I don't think you would. On Wednesday, the conservative web aggregator Drudge Report linked to a news article about the backlash, using this headline: "Calls to boycott Starbucks over holiday unity cup, showing liberal bias."
How? In what way?
I think, unless I'm missing it, it's just in the fact that the CEO has endorsed her, but there's nothing about the cup. If you look at it, first of all, you wouldn't even know it was one continuous line if you knew the part that I just read.
It looks like a bunch of people.
Looks like a bunch of faces.
Gathering together.
And even if you did know that, if you did know that the artistry involved had him just drawing one continuous line, you wouldn't all of a sudden go, oh, the liberal agenda. Look at this.
No, I would say, God, that's pretty cool and pretty deep and
right.
very artistic. And it's one line because we're all connected.
Right. Right.
We're stronger together, people.
All right. So here's one of the tweets that came to Starbucks. Starbucks, all of our employees will now be drinking Dunkin' Donuts from now on. Take your fascism somewhere else. A barista. No.
I don't understand, though. Could someone explain to me what is screaming liberals?
I can't figure that out either. A barista at a Manhattan Starbucks told Business Insider that people won't stop complaining to him about these new cups. We have new cups coming in next week, he says, referring to Starbucks' famous red holiday cups. The green Starbucks cups launched on the same day that Starbucks reintroduced the lineup of holiday beverages. This includes a caramel brulee latte and a chestnut praline latte.
That's totally liberal.
That is liberal. I will give you that.
Someone's going to believe you for saying that.
They've gone overboard
on.
In years past, Starbucks has launched its red holiday cups on the day holiday drinks returned to the menu. Last year, Starbucks faced a backlash when the company debuted minimalist red cups that weren't as Christmassy as usual. Do you remember that? People were obsessed.
Yes.
After evangelist and internet personality Joshua Fairstein posted a video on Facebook protesting the cups, the outrage and the outrage at the outrage quickly drew, with hundreds sharing their views on social media. The supposed outage did little to impact the chain of Starbucks. Starbucks had by far their strongest holiday season in history, and Schultz told people this in their earnings report, which was filed in January.
Well, now I'm reading on Snopes.com that people are mad because this doesn't seem like a holiday cup, but it's not intended for the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, people assumed that Starbucks was eliminating the Christian holiday or even promoting Islam because they took off a lot of the things that were Christmassy last year. You guys, it's flipping Starbucks.
It's just amazing the things people get upset about.
But I can't, you know what?
This upsets me.
It really upsets me, and I am going to buy a cup right now because I think it's really awesome,
yeah.
And it's meant to be a symbol of unity to encourage us to be good to each other.
How does this promote Islam? Although, if you
that was last year when they took away the Christmas items, and they just had like a block or something.
Although, if you try their new Islatte, have you had that?
I'm not going there. You're on your own for that. Bill Leff, L-E-F-F. WGN
no emails available. No phone numbers, no emails.
But I want to go get this cup just because I think it's really cool, and it's
it
only for
cool.
a limited edition, and it's not their holiday cup.
I think they might be done with them. I mean,
are they gone already?
Crap.
I had a white cup today.
Racist.
I said, no, white cup.
All right.
I can't take this world anymore. I was telling you off the air, it's like we're going backwards in some instances.
Right.
But then I can't even.
There are plenty of things in the world to legitimately
be upset about.
A cup with faces all drawn with a continuous line probably isn't one of them.
Andrew, is it because the cup's not red?
You know, that could be one thing. But, you know, first off, I want to say happy holidays. It's definitely the holidays because you've got pumpkin spice and Republican boycotts. What more the holiday do you need? That was my thing. That maybe it is because there is no red in it.
But they're bringing the red. This was just a limited time. Can we all get together? But evidently we can't, so I want to have a divisive cup. I want it half green and half red. That'll show you.
Or maybe you have something with an elephant and a donkey on it. They'd still probably figure some way to say that was...
It would upset people.
Yeah.
Right. An elephant and a donkey with their arms around each other enjoying coffee, that would still upset people.
Elephants don't drink coffee.
Right. Donkeys do, but elephants don't.
But that's the PETA agenda. That's right there.
It is, isn't it?
I can't take it anymore.
Wendy can't take it anymore.
I'm leaving.
She's going to Canada.
I'm going to Starbucks. I am so going to Starbucks after the show today. So thank you, people, for being irritated about it, because now I'm going to go get some and beg them for a green cup.
Do it. Andrew, thank you so much.
I'm going to wear them like pasties.
No problem. Have a good one, guys.
You're
going to wear what?
I'm going to wear the green cups like pasties.
All right.
They better have two of them. Maybe three.
I'm sorry. I just checked back in the conversation. What?
No, you came in at the wrong time, Steve. Came in at the wrong time. All right. We'll take a break, and then more of your calls and your texts, and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. The green cup was introduced on November 1st, featuring an impressive piece of artwork, as Bill mentioned, Shogo Ota.
The Shogo Ota must go on, Wendy. The oldest axiom in show business.
Featuring 100 faces all drawn with a single pen stroke, which I find very impressive.
Yeah, it is impressive. It's a good-looking illustration.
But
I almost said cartoon, and I think that sounds too kiddie.
Well, it is kind of cartoony.
Yeah.
It's kind of along the lines of a Where's Waldo?
Do you remember Jules Feiffer, the cartoonist Jules Feiffer? It's reminiscent of Jules Feiffer's work.
Where would I know him from?
I'm trying to think of where you'd know him from.
He's one of the Feiffer boys.
One of the
you
Feiffers.
You can't just whip out an artist's name. Was it Mad Magazine, like Al Jaffe?
He would be in the Sunday Funnies sometimes, Jules Feiffer.
Particular comic or just a little one scene
thing?
Trying
to remember what he had. He had
Nancy
one that
and
was
Sluggo,
because
that was the funniest ever.
Nancy and Sluggo? Yeah, that was funny. Every time.
Where
you'd
were
fall
we that
down.
You read it on the air every day?
That was the loop. I maintained, and I know this isn't fair for people who've read Nancy, but it's never been funny once. And yet, I read it every single day growing up. I never didn't read Nancy, but it was never even funny once it was always just not funny. I wanted it to be funny.
Many of those were not funny.
No,
and
I
don't know why I even read them.
I know. Aunt Fritzy was attractive. I think that's why I read it. I liked Aunt Fritzy.
Glad
but it
your
was always
have changed.
You always had Nancy eating an ice cream. Like that was the first frame. It's just Nancy with ice cream. And then the second one, Sluggo's walking by. And then in the third one, Sluggo goes, "Can I have some ice cream?" And then the fourth one, the payoff, Nancy goes, "Nope." Why is that funny?
It's not.
I want it to be. I just think if he had worked Ernie Bushmiller, if he had worked a little bit harder, you could have had a little bit of a better payoff.
And why would he need to?
But he was Sluggo. Didn't they get in fights more?
They were always bickering.
But Sluggo, you don't call him Bicko.
Sluggo's not going to slug Nancy.
No, he wasn't.
It was okay back then.
I guess.
Not on the page.
Right.
It really was never funny.
It was never funny. And I read it every day going,
it's
I
no
bet,
Love Is.
No, Love Is always funny. Love Is always pays off.
That is the sappiest piece of sap.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all the big, the Green Cup came out November 1st. Steve Bertrand has me very worried now that the cup is already gone 7 days into it.
You missed your chance.
You said it was a limited edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not 6 days.
Right. It should. You should have a little more time.
It was election, so it's probably, you know, they're going to run out by tomorrow.
I'm going today. I'm going to every Starbucks on the way home until
somebody
I get a Green Cup.
You'll never get there.
Somebody will have it.
What do you mean I'll never get there?
You go to every Starbucks on your
oh,
way
I'll never
home.
Get home.
Right.
All right, I got
There's
it.
68 Starbucks from here in your house.
That was a great year. Danielle, what about this cup?
Yeah, hey, guys. Love your show.
Thank
I'm an
you.
Uber driver. I listen to you guys every single day.
Thank
oh,
you.
Thanks. Were you it's listening awesome. The other day when Bill said he was going to print himself a fake Uber label so he could take
yes,
people
I
home?
Yes, I did.
Why don't you reprimand him on that?
I can't do that legally.
I'm like Nancy.
What?
You're like Sluggo.
You're right.
You know what? Bill, I love you, but no, you can't do that.
No, you can't do
that. Can I tell you something, Danielle?
I came to my senses.
He'd never let anybody with a little bit of dirt on the sole of their shoe in his car anyway, so.
That's awesome.
No
That's
worries.
Awesome.
Right.
So, listen, I wrote two comments real quickly. One's about the Green Cup, but also, you guys were talking earlier about David Roth.
Yeah.
And how he was in
Saturday Night Live?
New York.
Yeah,
and then he was at the Blackhawks game last night, but he wasn't at the beginning. He did shoot the puck.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, I thought I saw him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he wasn't at the beginning, but he did do the shoot the puck.
Oh, that's cool.
So,
how did he do?
He didn't make anything, but it was very good, and it was very cool, so he was there for that. So anyway, the Green Cup. All right, so I talked to some friends that work at Starbucks, and this is what I learned about it. It's supposed to be typically an election cup because of the fact that it's unity, like you said, one line, we're all together.
Yeah.
The reason they're doing it green is because if you add red and blue, it makes green or kind of like a green, and it's supposed to be the two parties coming together.
Wait, red and blue make purple.
Yeah, I know that, but that's just what the people were telling me at Starbucks. That
it would be yellow and blue makes green.
Yellow and
blue.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be the two parties coming together, and that would be the neutral color.
Oh.
So it is only an election cup. The red cups will be back, like you said.
Yeah.
I was just throwing that in there.
So how does it go? How do you look at it and say that that's liberal? Because I am not seeing it. The only thing is there might be two women with their arms around each other. Is that supposed to show?
I've seen the cup before. I've drank out of it. I don't see anything that's showing anything supporting either side. So whoever those people are, they just need to get over it.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Danielle. Drive safely.
Will do. Take care, guys.
Bye, Danielle.
Oops.
Thank you.
And David has a more important issue than the Starbucks cup. Hi, David.
Hey, guys. Much more important than the cups, because as long as the cup is hot, it makes me go to the bathroom. It's poured into my hand. I don't care.
All right, what's more important?
The cups, aren't they coming out with a commemorative beer can? Wasn't there? I thought I saw a tweet or heard about Old Style or... Someone's coming out. Bill, you should be on top of this.
Well,
you are the king of everything.
I know that there have been Pepsi cans for the last couple of weeks with the Cubs logo on it, but I'm not sure about beer.
Easy,
but
Sluggo,
but
you and your soda pop.
But I do see it on Pepsi cans. and juice boxes.
Is there a championship Pepsi can that's coming out?
It's already been. I don't know if it says. It just says the Cubs logo. It doesn't signify that they're champions. But if I'm Pepsi and I'm a sponsor, yeah, go all out. Put the World Series logo on there too. Why not?
Totally. Because I have to buy everything. That
yeah.
Happens on it.
I'm with you.
What was the beer that had the Bears on it? That
Hams?
Yeah. No. It had a Bears logo.
Chicago Bears.
Yeah, they had a bunch of different logos and still didn't, no one would buy it.
Well, it was the only can you could drop really easily. There was one company that did all the teams in football except two. They couldn't do the Bears because they had a beer sponsorship with another company. Remember?
Really?
Remember in the commercial they would flash all the logos really quickly, but we didn't see a Bears logo? And it's because they
kind of remember that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll try and find out this the answer to your question.
We'll figure it out, David.
I promise.
Your
query.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Have
Thanks,
a good
David.
Day. All right. We have to break for news. News is next. Steve will give you the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And the month of November has been dedicated to National Runaway Prevention Month. In the studio with us right now, Maureen Blaha, the executive director of the National Runaway Safe Line. Thank you for coming in today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. This is really an honor to be here. And I have to tell you, it's a very special day, not only because it's November, National Runaway Prevention Month, but it is my 16th anniversary as the executive director of the National Runaway Safe Line. So
very nice.
Great day to celebrate here. Thank you.
Well, it takes a special person. I mean, I just think back to when I was little and maybe I didn't get a toy I wanted and I'd be like, that's it. I'm running away from home. Back then, we said it and never did it. And now, just looking at the news, just 5 hours ago, a 12-year-old was located after running away. 12 years old, these kids are running away.
Yeah, it's really difficult for all of us, even me who does this job every day, to imagine that someone that young is feeling so overwhelmed and there's some sort of conflict or something going on in her life that she doesn't quite know how to cope and maybe doesn't know to reach out to the National Runaway Safe Line because we could really help her think about, you know, what would it really look like if you ran from home. But Wendy, I think that that's a really good point because what I would say to parents is if they're youngster, and it's more often, of course, teenagers, but if ever a teen would say, I'm thinking of running or I'm getting out of here, you know, it might be in a fit of anger, but I would say to parents, really take that seriously. It's perhaps
so what do you
a
do?
Warning sign.
What do you do? How do you take that seriously? Maybe 10:30 on a Sunday night, your 12-year-old kid runs out the door and says, that's it, I'm leaving, and they're in stocking feet.
Well, I mean, I would certainly go get them.
Yes.
Absolutely. And sometimes that might be the way it is, or sometimes it might just come up in some sort of conversation. And I would say that the parent needs to take a deep breath and really say, wait a minute, Wendy. Wait a minute, Bill. We need to have a conversation about this. And do what you can as a parent to kind of dive into what are those feelings that that young person is going through? What's the conflict that they're dealing with that they kind of don't know how to handle? And talk about bringing in resources, including calling 1-800-RUNAWAY.
So obviously, take it very seriously if you have a child who's threatening to run away. How do you handle the situation differently if it's somebody who's a preteen, somebody who's 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 or 12, as opposed to somebody in their teens?
Well, it's unusual for someone, you know, a 12-year-old to run away from home. But we do respond to young kids. And now that we have, you know, more platforms for people to reach out, not just the hotline anymore, like it was 16 years ago when I got here, but online by chatting. And so what we're noticing, and we did some, you know, analysis of our statistics from last year, is that we are hearing more from the 13-year-olds, the 12-year-olds, and what they're more comfortable with is doing a live chat, not necessarily picking up the phone, but connecting with us online. And we just say, well, what's going on? And for a parent, I would say, really still say, you know, what? Why are you feeling that way? Let's talk about it. You know, we need to work together as a family. We want to stay together as a family.
Yeah.
All right. So you say that, and I understand how more kids would be probably more willing to be open by texting or chatting than actually talking voice to voice, because kids don't usually do that much anymore. But so how do kids get the number to call you? Because I know we have parents listening right now. The number's 1-800-RUNAWAY. You can put that a little sticker on your refrigerator, whatever you want. But how are little kids getting this number to call?
Well, that's a great question. And what I would say today, the primary way that young people, as parents as well, are finding us is really just by going online. And so our website, I'm very happy to say, when you click in, you know, you press the, you know, you click in Runaway, then ours is really up there in the top several that come up. And so then we talk about connect with us in different ways.
I don't know if you've come armed with statistics, but is the runaway problem getting better or worse in the country?
It's a great question, Bill. The reality is there isn't a lot of research that's done on this population. So what I will tell you is that the research that has been done, and some of it's several years old, is that 1.6 to 2.8 million youth will have a runaway episode this year. They will run from home. And so what I like to say is it's a silent crisis, although when a runaway episode happens, it really touches not only the family but the community, and everyone is touched by that.
Realistically, a kid who's a teenager, we're talking about 13, 14, 15-year-old kids, it's if it's not impossible to survive on the streets, it's near impossible. These stories don't have happy endings, do they?
No. What we know is that when a young person ends up on the streets, initially they are very vulnerable to becoming victims of crime, including being recruited into the sex trafficking, human trafficking vortex. But the longer that they're on the streets just for survival is then they become perpetrators of crime. Mm-hmm. And so the more that we can, as a society, intervene to help these young people get to safety, that's what we need to do to work together. And being on your show today is really helping to educate about 1-800-RUNAWAY.
Good.
We have Maureen Blaha in the studio, the executive director of the National Runaway Safe Line for the past 16 years. Congratulations on that. The number is 1-800-RUNAWAY. It's not just like kids who have problems or are bad kids that want to run away because they're mad that mom said turn off the TV at midnight. These are kids that have been abused in some way, verbally, other ways perhaps. So if these kids need a parent to talk to, maybe they don't have a parent to talk to, who do they talk to?
So when we get a call or connect with a young person, what we try to do is really focus in on the main issue and really let them know that they've called a place that's safe to talk to, that we care. And we'll talk about what's going on and really help them come up with a plan of action to get out of that crisis mode. And if talking to their parent isn't really a good option,
maybe it's
for
the parent who's abusing them.
And it could be because of that. You know, we talk about other trusted adults, you know, could be a coach, could be a teacher, could be a Girl Scout leader, you know, whatever it might be, and really kind of help them frame what it is that they, you know, want to talk about with that person. And we also have 10,000 resources in our database. So we could connect, we are nationwide, but we could connect young people with other resources as well.
You gave some staggering numbers a little while ago about the amount of kids every year that are runaways. Where do we rank here in Chicago?
That's a great question. We are, in terms of the call volume and the connections that we make, Illinois is always within the top five of all of the states in the United States. And part of that is because of obviously, population. Here we are in Chicago. But the National Runaway Safe Line is 45 years old. Mm. And we were founded here in Chicago back in 1971 and then went national in 1974. So we have very deep roots here in Chicago. And many people are supporters of us, you know, through schools and letting people know. We have lots of donors. And we have 120 volunteers who come into our crisis center every week to work at least a two-hour shift after they've gone through 40 hours of training. So if any of your listeners are interested in really having an impact on this issue, they're lucky to be in Chicago because we have opportunities for them to volunteer.
Good.
And 1-800-RUNAWAY.org is the website?
That's right.
1-800-RUNAWAY is the phone number. Are there some warning signs we should be looking for?
Absolutely. In addition to a young person saying, I'm going to run, rebellious behavior that might be kind of out of the ordinary. All of a sudden, the child might be truant from school, changes in behavior. So this is a teenager that maybe sleeps a lot. All of a sudden, they're anxious. They're not sleeping. They're not eating. It may be if they're accumulating possessions like money and things that they're kind of thinking of this. Although the reality is when young people run from home, they really don't typically have a plan of where they're going, and they think something is better than home. Because of a conflict, it's not always about abuse, but it's family dynamics where that, you know, communication has really broken down. Something's going on in the home that the young person is kind of doesn't really know how to cope and doesn't know what to do with that and feels like, I just want to get out of here. I don't want to be here anymore.
We have Dr. John Duffy, a clinical psychologist, on every other week here. And I didn't know that there is a non-emergency police number that you can call, too, if there's if your kid is acting a different or he's going to run away, because maybe you don't have time to call the hotline, 1-800-RUNAWAY. Maybe it's something more immediate. But, you know, nobody's family is perfect, and I really think people are lying if they say, oh, everything's perfect in our family. I hate that our windows are open sometimes because the whole block can hear us yelling, you know, but it happens in
block.
A family.
I live in Evanston.
I know
I can
you
hear
can.
You
well, I'm, that's just me. I'm louder. But I mean, that's just it. Nobody's family life is perfect every single minute of every day. And you do have to try and keep the lines of communication open with your kids. And, you know, if they're mad about something, say, hey, I understand you're mad about it. Let's talk about it. But you're doing some great work. 1-800-RUNAWAY is the phone number to call. Also the website, 1-800-RUNAWAY.org. And you've done some great work over the past 16 years.
Thank you.
And if someone else would like to volunteer, you do need training, though, to volunteer to be part of this.
But we provide the training. And once you get through the training, we're open 24 hours. So you get to pick your shift. And it's a really wonderful opportunity. I will tell you one of the quotes from one of our volunteers that I would love to share. When I asked her why she did this work for us, she said, because at the beginning of the call, I hear despair, and at the end of the call, I hear hope.
That's beautiful.
That is
that
beautiful.
Says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Very,
absolutely.
Very nice.
It's National Runaway Prevention Month, and unfortunately, I just saw something in the news over the weekend. Some little girl, I think, from Evanston. This was the second time she ran away. They did relocate her and bring her home, and you just wonder if she's going to try it again.
Well, I would hope that the family that is going through that is thinking about how to mend that relationship. And I would encourage them, if they're listening, to call 1-800-RUNAWAY, because we do have resources. Maybe a family counselor, maybe somebody can help, you know, intervene to keep that family intact. Mm-hmm.
Santa's going to be very good to you this year. You know that.
Well, thank you.
16 years, executive director of the National Runaway Safe Line. Her name is Maureen Blaha. And again, if you need help, 1-800-RUNAWAY is the phone number to call. You can also visit their website at 1-800-RUNAWAY.org. Thank you and continued success.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Great to meet you, Maureen. We'll take a quick break and then we have a bit more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, yes, the Cubs are the World Series champions, but I have to tell you, the estimated 5 million people lining the 6-mile parade route and gathered at the rally in Grant Park might have been inflated.
Yeah, the initial estimate, and what they would do, I guess, is they would take a sample, a small sample, like a cube, and they would count the
people
in there.
How many people can fit in a cube? Maybe your big toe. I know it's a picture, an aerial view.
A larger cube than that. And then they would multiply it by how many. But, they initially said about 5 million.
But who said that? And what is the exact total? Have we gotten that yet? If somebody's disputing it.
328 people were actually there, not 5 million. These elections are rigged.
Science to calculating the crowds. The most common method, as Bill said, draw a grid, make an estimate based on the average number of people that would fit into each section. Another way to gauge crowds, particularly in a city such as Chicago, would be to analyze the capacity of buses or trains to deliver millions of people downtown or along the parade route.
They were off. Wasn't quite 5 million. And then over the weekend, I'm sure you heard this. We were being told that this was the seventh largest gathering of people
in all the world,
in all the galaxy.
Is that true?
I don't know. I want to find what the top six were, because I don't know what those were. I want to see what those were.
You're right. The people, why don't you look it up?
I had seen some of them, and they were mostly like religious gatherings from a long time ago, things like that.
Right. So in recent history, this is if you can find them, If this was the seventh largest gathering of all people in the world,
right,
of all time, did they base that on the inflated 5 million numbers?
I think they did, because I was hearing that number, seventh largest gathering of all time, before they kind of backtracked on the $5 million people guess.
What did Trump do the counting?
I don't know who did the counting.
It was huge.
I don't know who did the counting. There's no way to it's impossible. You can't accurately figure out how many people were there.
Well, as they said, they look at the train and the buses and stuff, and if you notice, it pretty much shut Union Station down.
I know. And I guess Kevin was telling me that the ride back when it was over, if you were trying to get on public transportation to get back to wherever you came from, it was a several-hour wait.
Yes. So
for the trains at Union Station.
And here's the thing: when people came downtown, it staggered a little bit. There were people that came very early, people that came closer to parade time. But then when everybody wanted to go home, it was like
impossible.
The same time.
Yeah.
You have those top.
Yeah, and you're gonna have to bear
gatherings.
With me. You have to bear with me on the pronunciation.
Oh,
here.
This is always fun.
You want to go largest to.
Oh,
ascending or descending?
Go tell us what the sixth one was.
Number six was World Youth Day. That was in 1995.
Remember that?
5 million.
No, what
Wasn't
is that?
That fun?
It's
World Youth
soccer?
Day. It was just, it was a celebration of kids.
It was the youth.
Yeah, I know what
it says
in the title. You two.
It was a day of. Yeah, it was
day
the day.
Where was
youth.
It?
The world.
Everywhere.
Okay, so we don't have a complete list of what these events were.
And
okay.
There was the papal gathering in the Philippines in 2015.
The Pope was in the Philippines.
And that was 6 million.
So this was bigger or no?
They're saying this was bigger
These
than...
Were
there
better.
Is no,
no
way.
No, the Cubs rally was smaller than this.
Oh,
is
okay.
What it was.
Yeah.
Then number four, it was the funeral of Ayatollah Khomeini.
Khomeini.
You're right. Adorable.
Iran.
Can I just tell you that? Iran so far away.
And that was 10 million.
10 million came to that?
That's what they're saying.
Wow.
And then there was the funeral of C.N. Annadurai in India in 1969. That was 15 million.
Yeah.
Then there was the Arbaeen Festival in Iraq in 2014 at 17 million.
Holy moly.
Wow.
And then the number one is the Kumbh Mela pilgrimage in India in 2013, 30 million.
30
Good
million.
God, y'all.
That's a bunch.
That's a lot of y'all.
It is.
All right, I don't know what the numbers are, and I don't know if we're ever going to find out, but 5 million coming downtown for the Cubs parade and rally.
Rickshaw business was amazing on Friday.
Have you seen those guys? When you're in traffic, these guys weave in and out of other cars.
I know.
When I was going to Kevin's wedding, there was a rickshaw dude who was like so close to hitting our car, I almost got out and yelled at him.
Oh, no.
Nobody invited him. He was just...
Freelancer.
All right.
But I made so much rickshaw money on Friday.
The Richter Garris wedding hit number 15 on the list.
You guys were that high up, your wedding was?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
That's excellent.
But I want to know what the real numbers are, because 5 million is a little inflated.
Yeah, just slightly. All right, we'll take a quick break. And then Roanne will be by. We'll find out what they have coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.